Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, good evening. You heard Brian there. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. It's your nightly confrontation with the facts. And I fear we have some facts to confront tonight. You can start with Jack Abramoff. Can you do that to a Jack? Can you do that to a Bram? No, sorry, that's just old and stale, and I should stop doing it every time I say his name, but I can't help myself. Seriously, though, Jack Abramoff got the minimum sentence possible for the crime that he committed in his sentencing today in South Florida. Now, bear in mind, you know, don't start rending your garments and sitting in sackcloth and ashes or anything. It's not like this was the end of the gig. Because our buddy Jack still has some serious federal charges hanging over his head. This just had to do with the little criminal enterprise that he entered into in trying to take over a group of floating casinos. So we've got that to deal with. And, of course, you know the phone numbers. You heard the phone numbers. You know, free speech isn't free if you don't use it. Isn't that funny? 877, the number 4, Head On, 877-443-2366. If you want to jump in, you're more than welcome to. Think we're going to have a little interview here in a little bit. I hope we're going to have a little interview here in a little bit. That's the way it was scheduled. We'll have to wait till the quarter hour and find out. But more than anything else, and you know this, it's Wednesday night. That means it's prayer meeting edition.
The Wednesday afternoon discussion club. We are going to have more to discuss on this every other Wednesday afternoon than we ever had on any other every other Wednesday afternoon.
It is Wednesday, right? Yeah, I think it is. So you heard it there in John Fox's Top of the Hour News from the Washington Post. This story was sent to me by our buddy Gene in Oregon. Just in time for a prayer meeting, he said. Yeah, exactly. These silly sods. See how nice I can be? I didn't say sorry, seventh sons of syphilitic sea cooks. These silly sods of the right-wing religion industry have decided that they're persecuted. They're persecuted. It breaks me up. I want to pray for him. And you'll notice that Abdul Rahman, the Afghani guy who was going to be beheaded by the so-called moderate clerics, the moderate Islamic clerics in the new Afghan democracy, he has arrived in Italy, according to proto-fascist Italian President Silvio Berlusconi. And, well, I'm sorry, but after all the hooting and hollering, I mean, you know, hooting like an old barn owl that the American Family Association did, I'm a little bit amazed that, those welcoming arms just weren't out there. Yeah, I'm going to hammer this home. I've talked about it for three or four nights now. Not one right-wing religion industry group offered sanctuary to Abdul Rahman. Now, they were more than happy to get on the phone and create their little, their little email sewing circle, shall we say. Got it all heated up to tell George Bush, tell them Afghan Democrats. Afghan democracy. God. Oh, an Afghan democracy. Oh, that's dandy. To tell the Afghan democracy not to lop the head off of that fellow what done offended Islam. But not Donald Wildman, not Randall Terry, not James Dobson, not Jerry Falwell. Oh, and we've got Falwell today, too, because he's got a new special friend. Not the D. James Kennedy of the Coral Snake Ministries of Florida. Not Brother Monahan, who's building Ave Maria, Florida. Nobody in the right-wing religion industry offered sanctuary to Abdul Rahman. Because he's, well, you know, one, like we said last night, he's brown, and two, he's Catholic. And you have to, you know, that's, you know, you have to be down there at the fellowship hall getting dinner on Wednesday night when you know that there's nobody else around who's going to hear it, when you really hear the Southern Baptists laying it on thick on the Roman Catholics. Oh, yeah. So, we've got that. Now, this is a full plate tonight, but yeah, they're persecuted. The first line of the Washington Post story from today, from page A12, the war on Christmas has morphed into a war on Christians. Yeah, I know. The Kool-Aid must have been real. I think they're mainlining it. Last December, some evangelical Christian groups, blah, 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 blah. You know about the best thing that's been done thus far is Stephen Colbert and his war on Easter. That's just, if you didn't see it, you really missed something. But radio commentator Rick Scarborough, as noted in our top of the hour news, convened a two-day conference in Washington on the war on Christians and the values voters in 2006. And the opening session was devoted to, quote, reports from the front lines on persecution of Christians in the United States and Canada. And, yeah, whew. It really does make you just a little itty-bitty bit crazy when you think about, and again, I respect people of faith because they're able to do something that, for the most part, I'm not. I got to go on knowledge. I got to go on something that is tangible and something that I can know as opposed to, you know, the whole Tinkerbell thing. I can't do it. It just offends my entire the sense of how the world works. You know, it's not you put the hydrogen two hydrogen atoms together with an atom of oxygen and a miracle occurs in its water. No, it's knowable, it's measurable, it's real, baby, it is so real. So I respect people for their faith, and people that are willing to die for their faith, whew, man, that's guts. You know, it's said that the Emperor Nero lit the Appian Way with Christians who had been impaled on stakes and dipped in olive oil. That's persecution. Persecution is when the crazy fundies in the new Afghan democracy. God, I laugh every time I say that, Afghan democracy. when they want to lop your head off for which way you believe, you know, that's persecution. That's persecution. Not getting to ram your right-wing, religious fundamentalist, Republican-sponsored garbage down the throat of everybody in America, that's not persecution. Nobody's persecuting them. You know, Tristan Emmanuel, oh boy, there's a winner. Tristan Emmanuel said, it doesn't rise to the level of persecution that we would see in China or North Korea, but let's not pretend that it's okay. What? For God's sakes, what? What are they doing to them? I mean, are they telling, you can't vote, you're a Christian. No! No. Nothing of the sort, for God's sakes. You know, and K. Holland Hallman, General Counsel of the Baptist Joint Committee for Religious Liberty, that would be your not Southern Baptists, said certainly religious persecution existed in our history, but to claim that these examples amount to religious persecution disrespects the experiences of people who have been jailed and died because of their faith. Yes. But that's okay, because Rick Scarborough is sitting around. Oh, listen to who showed up for this little party. Well, the bug man himself, Tom DeLay, you know. Oh, man, get me some more of that paraquat. Jesus, that's good. And then there's Senator John Cornyn of Texas. You remember John Cornyn. He's the guy who said he understood people who went and blew away judges. And then there's Sam Brownback Mountain of Kansas. And Phyllis Schlafly and Rod Parsley. Rod Parsley from Ohio, the guy who's trying to do an end run on the entire 501c3 tax structure for charitable organizations. And if he does, I'm opening me one. And Gary Bauer. And then there's Janet Parshall, who will live in forever in infamy, sticking her fingers in her ears while trying to debate Randy Rhodes and going la 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 while Randy was sticking the facts in her and breaking it off. And then, oh yes, that's dinner, but dessert was Alan Keyes. These people think they are persecuted. You down with that? Can you get your mind around that? These people equate, these weird people equate not getting to foist their hateful religion off on the rest of us with being persecuted. And if that's not enough to make you take a big old drink of the strychnine, say I love you to the poisonous serpent and go running around the room, I just about don't know what does. Time to take a break. Your calls are welcome, of course. 877, the number 4, head on. I'm Bob Kincaid.
McGruff, the crime dog here with my nephew Scruff. Get a pencil and write down an important address. It's for the new McGruff comic activity book.
And it's full of me.
The address is...
Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Hey, Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652. Tells you what to do about guns and about bullies and drugs and about strangers who want to give you a ride.
Scruff, Chicago, Illinois,
and it's full of games and puzzles, too. So for your free copy of my new comic activity book, just write...
Scruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Not bad.
Can I do it again?
One more time.
Scruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
You'll be helping me take a bite out of crime.
A public service message from this station, the U.S. Department of Justice, the Crime Prevention Coalition, and the Ad Council.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? If you did the unexpected? Would you feel scared? Proud? Relieved? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Or assisting an entrepreneur in Ukraine to launch her small business. Or creating a support group in Malawi for children orphaned by AIDS. What if you established your own path? One that others might follow. Would you rather make your own way? Or spend your life saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. Find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or go to peacecorps.gov.
The president came out and talked about the Iraq War and how he had a strategy to win the peace. I have some exclusive audio. This is actually him preparing for the speech in front of the mirror. This is him laying out the strategy for Iraq.
Hi. That was the most coherent thing I've heard him say in ages, man.
You know, if he really spoke that way, it would be so much better for us all. Because at least then we would know that he's an incoherent bastard and we could have him locked up.
And that's just a taste of what Bruce and I got up to last weekend. Come and join us next weekend, Saturday night, 10 p.m. Eastern. To get the stream details, go to 4thEstateRadio.com. That's 4thEstateRadio.com.
This is Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to.
Apparently, on the right-hand side, on the right wing, the leadership in the Republican Party is not so cozy with the pro-life movement. They say pro-life. That's bull. If they were pro-life, they wouldn't send people to die in battle. If they were pro-life, you know, they would put money into a temporary aid for needy families, TANF, which is an entitlement. If they were pro-life, they would help with creating better pensions for us to live our remaining years in relative peace and serenity rather than having to work until you're 85 years old in order to make a living. If they were pro-life, if they were really, really pro-life, then we wouldn't be in the middle of a war. Bottom line.
Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
Here's Bob Kincaid.
God's in his heaven, and I'm back behind the illustrious Electro Voice RE20. And Agnes is in her chair tonight. I know there will be lots of sighs of real gratitude just at that knowledge. Coming up on 23 minutes after the hour, and let's run straight to the phones. I hope my interview comes through, but if it doesn't, we'll have just as much fun anyway. Rick is with us from Panama City, Florida. Hey, Rick, you're head on.
How you doing, Bob?
I'm doing good.
You guys sound in treetop tall. You guys sound really good.
Well, thank you.
5x5, man.
Great.
All right, and a couple of things I just got to clear up the loose ends of for last night, you know, because I think Wayne misunderstood me on a couple of things.
Okay.
And that is, I was not advocating a third party. I think he got that feeling that I was, and I'm not. But what made me vote outside of my party. And why I voted for Harry Brown was, is because I couldn't vote for Bush. And it was a policy question. I mean, Wayne downplayed it by saying that he made a stupid statement when he said, when he was asked, what would you be your policy on abortion? And that's right. You can get this video. It's in one of the first presidential debates.
Mm-hmm.
And Al Gore said, right up to the moment of delivery, because he was being a jerk. He was trying to be all things to all people. And that was this total, you know. And I said to myself, he can't possibly mean that, but then it was a policy question. And he left me no place to go but outside the party and vote for Harry Brown. And as far as Wayne said, he said, I could have waited all the rest of my life not to hear that he voted for Harry Brown. Well, that's what you do when you're left with no alternative. And I know we don't see eye to eye on this.
And I don't think we ever will, Rick.
No, we never will. But me and my family, we're not going to vote for either one of those guys, and we were going to log our protest vote. Now,
let me ask you a question.
Let me finish.
All right.
I mean, it's your show, but I want to just finish. It just, that does not mean we would be suicidal enough to do that again. We're not going to do that again. Because I took a lot of stock in what you were telling me last night and the things that Wayne said later on. And, yeah, we all got to pull together as a team on this one. We really do. Some of us will just have to hold our noses. But everybody holding their noses on people like that freak from Connecticut and that freak from Delaware is going to get screwed, and a few others.
I hope so.
You know, they're going to get screwed in a bad way, because if you vote for Lieberman and if you vote for the Mr. Hare, and if you vote for Hillary, you know where I'm standing.
Yeah, well, you know, I was reminded of our conversation, Rick, because, you know, lo and behold, I turned on the TV and there he was.
Yeah.
There was Joe Biden. I mean, there's like, you know, something that takes a higher level of physics that I'm not competent to even discuss. You know, camera, you know, when there's a camera, it's like, it's worse than, it's more powerful than magnetism or gravity or anything. It's, boom, there's Joe.
Yeah, I even tried, you know, I tried reminding myself, his wife died in a car accident, he raised his kid by himself. I know all about him. But I also know that Capital One and other credit card companies that just have, they've infested themselves on Delaware. And they own him. And then he has the audacity to come on TV and act as if he's one of us. And it makes me more madder than Lieberman, because Lieberman, that guy, at least he doesn't fake the fact that he's a sellout. And Lieberman, Biden, he has not owned up to it. And he's still trying to convince me, you, and everybody else in America that's a Democrat that he's on our side. And he's not. I mean, the guy's bought and paid for it.
Well, you know, the funny thing is he's, with Lieberman, and this is not an apologia, this is in no wise a defense, the guy's got a better environmental record than most of the so-called environmental Democrats.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Yeah.
But, so you know,
and if you look at his voting record, every vote he took had no risk. It was either going to be defeated or wholly accepted. Take a look at it again.
Oh, I know.
I'm not going on a limb for anything.
Well, let me ask you a question. Knowing what you know now,
mm-hmm.
About the way Florida turned out.
Yeah.
Knowing that, had you known that the thing was going to be decided by, say, Jewish people in Palm Beach County who were somehow going to temporarily go absolutely sprayed roach crazy and vote for Pat Buchanan, knowing that the election in Florida was going to be determined by less than 600 votes.
On the Supreme Court had something to do with the people that came down here and shouted and banged on the glass, yes?
Yeah, knowing all of that,
yeah.
And this is strictly 2020 hindsight, does Harry Brown still get your vote?
Well, no,
I mean, this is the same kind of inquiry that we have to have up here in West Virginia, Rick, because, again, had West Virginia, for the first time since Christ was a teenager, had West Virginia gone for Gore instead of, going absolutely psychotic and voting for George W. Bush, we got five miserable little electoral votes here.
I know, but you guys,
and had our five electoral votes gone where they were supposed to go, Florida wouldn't have mattered.
Agnes, you won't let me answer the question.
Well, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, honestly, with everything that was going on with the Harris woman, with all the voting machines, with everything that had, I mean, we had police outside of precincts in the poor neighborhoods, and it was all over the news. They're going to check on child support. They're going to check on if you got a parking ticket. This is what was going on in Florida. It didn't get the big press, but the local news covered it. I mean, they put an ominous message out, Channel 7 down here, and Channel, I think it's 13. They all the local news, and it happens throughout every precinct. You know, be sure that your tags are right. Don't go into a parking lot if you got bald tires. You know, it was all fixed. They were going to make sure that only the whitest of the whitest and the rightest of the rightest and those that could afford this, that, and everything was going to have a right to vote. I mean, I went right into my voting precinct, and I didn't have a problem.
No.
Okay? And I'm only half white, for
God's
sake. But I got a decent car, and I'm also very active politically. I mean, but the fact of the matter is that they were only going to target the certain neighborhood. And this went on throughout the whole state.
So oh, yeah.
Telling me that,
and it wasn't just Florida. I mean, it was all over the country.
Your question to me was, would I do it differently? And my answer is no, because I was stuck up against the odds. you made my argument when you talked about the people in Miami. You talk about the people in that county, the Jewish people.
So, with it still coming down to less than 600 votes, that of you
no,
and
no,
your
no. It didn't come down to less than 600 votes.
The way it was decided, the way it was decided, it did. Rick, the way it was decided, it did.
There was. I don't care what number you put on it. I don't care what number. It could have been 7,000 votes. It could have been 25,000 votes. The fix was in. It didn't matter what I did. And it didn't matter what the people in Miami-Dade did. It didn't matter. The fix was in. This is a hijacked state. Jeb Bush delivered the state to his brother by hook and crook. I mean, everybody knows it. Nobody just wants to say it. And so, no, I don't regret my vote because my vote wouldn't have been counted had I voted for Kerry.
Well, do you have any impression that your vote for your libertarian vote was counted?
No, I don't have any impression at all. For Pete's sake, I found out that all these absentee ballots that we've been using are not even secure here in Bay County. I mean, I voted for John Kerry. Me and my entire family voted for John Kerry, absentee, because we were warned by the Democratic Party, actually the DLC, to vote absentee.
Right.
And then we had a big stink down here in Bay County where so many tens of thousands of absentee ballots got lost and weren't counted. And then they tried to sue to get them to recount them, and then they wouldn't recount them. The election was a settled issue because the percentage was so high. So when you got that going on, how can you regret your vote? The best thing you can do is stand. You have to stand for something.
Well, I just, you know, I pray that, you know, knowing what's coming in 06 this year and knowing what's coming in 08 and knowing the news out of Florida today about the Secretary of State issuing subpoenas for Diebold and ESNS and Sequoia.
That's
and
right.
And the hissy that they're having against Eon Sancho, and there's a fresh hissy going on somewhere out west. Because the Diebold got caught cheating again out there, and they were caught by someone who brought black box voting in.
We have a chance this time, and that's why I can guarantee to the American public as I speak right here, I promise you we'll vote a Democrat across the board. We'll do that for you, and I'll do it even against my better judgment. But here's the situation. For you people up there in them states that got them, I want to use like the RB, B word, like rat
bastards.
You know,
sure.
Yeah, them guys. You know, they're not for you. And if we do get the House, if we at least get the House, maybe we can get something done. And if we get the Senate, well, then maybe we can get something done. But it all comes down to maybe because these guys aren't for you. They're not for me. They're not for you. They represent these entities, and they're going to be trying to do damage control and salvage. And they're going to be trying to do damage control and salvage for themselves. I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to understand that if somebody's your sugar daddy, then maybe, perhaps, you're going to do what your sugar daddy says. And even if your mom says, couldn't you shovel the snow out of my yard? But your sugar daddy's saying, no, you're going to shovel the snow out of my yard. You can get to her later. You're going to go shovel your sugar daddy's yard. I mean, that's just a fact of life, and it's that blood simple. And people have got to get their minds around the fact of how corrupted these people are. Yes, they will make that compromise. They are a slave to their lifestyle. They're a slave to their new car, their mortgage, and everything else, and their FaceTime on TV. And until we accept that, we're lost souls. We're traveling around.
Well, you know, I say that you can get through life and do pretty well understanding the three fundamental rules that W.C. Fields laid down.
Yeah, I know. I know exactly.
And rule one is you can't cheat an honest man.
That's right.
Now, if we allow ourselves to be conned by dinos, Democrats in name only, mugwumps, whatever you want to call them, if we allow ourselves to be conned by those people, then we have violated Fields' first commandment.
That's right.
For we are no longer honest people.
But then you'll smack down anybody that brings it up. You know, I mean, you can't have it both ways. You've got.
Well, I know this much. You know, I saw a number of Democrats come to the floor of the House to do a lovely job of just making fools of the Republican Party today. They came down there and they had a list of Bush administration and Republican congressional screw-ups.
Yep.
And they came down there and delivered a one-minute speech and rubber-stamped it.
Yeah, and then at the same time, the DLC gave their handout today. Did you hear how they're going to fix America?
No, I missed that one. Must have missed that one.
Oh, you got to get that one. That you got to get that.
See, I'm not on the DLC mailing list because there's only so much screaming I can do before I lose my voice every
evening. Honestly, you got to get it, Bob. You got to see it for yourself and then tell me I'm crazy, right? These people, they came up, they sent out this handout. We're going to make America better. Everything's going to be okay. Don't worry about a thing. Everything will be just nice. Everything's going to be lovely.
Well, you know, it drives me crazy. This segues nicely into something that I saw earlier today. I went over, I always read the CNN Wire at CNN.com just because it's quicker than, you know, just clicking link after link after freaking link.
I do the same thing with it through Tampa Tribune.
And what I saw was, let me see if I, oh, here was the head, yeah, this was the first, this was the lead headline on the CNN Wire, and it just, you know, runs screaming into the night because, you know, CNN's liberal. Horse hockey. The headline was, Democrats paint themselves as strong on national defense. Who wrote that headline?
Yeah, really.
Who let them out of who let that little that little web designer who's doing those headlines, who let them out of journalism school?
I mean, but that's what we're getting across the whole board. I mean, we're at such a ferocious civil war right now. I mean, we really are entering the Civil War part. We just haven't fired a shot. I mean, everybody wants to call it a cultural war. It's not.
Well, you know, we've already been told by Don Rumsfeld that it, you know, in order to be a Civil War, you know, that we know that it won't look like our Civil War looked like last time. Yeah, there's a Civil War underway. And people like this Rick Scarborough creature that's got his little convention going on. And I'm persecuted. Oh, dear Jesus, I'm persecuted.
Oh, it's so sad, these people. And we just had a minister murdered in your home state there in Alabama. Did you hear about that?
Oh, no, that was Tennessee, wasn't it?
No, it was Alabama.
No, the dude in Selmer, Tennessee, his wife blew him away and then fled to Alabama and went to the beach.
Oh, okay, she went to Alabama. And went.
Yeah, she went down to the Redneck Riviera, man.
Yeah.
She went to Orange Beach. I mean, you can probably throw a rock from Bay County and hit Orange Beach, Alabama.
Oh, hell yeah. I've been there. But it's just, you know, it's the big story. There's nothing going on in Bay County.
Well, I guess she did persecute him. The only problem was she was a fundy weirdo just like him.
Well, I'm glad she shot him.
I
don't have any problem with that.
Well, see, they keep saying police will not really reveal the motive in this case,
although
they will say that it was not infidelity. Well, you know what? If he wasn't in
the white woman, you can't say nothing about her.
No. You got to back up. They had three beautiful daughters. This guy's 31 years old.
Mm-hmm.
He's the beloved new preacher of the Fourth Street Church of Christ in Selmer, Tennessee, which is a stone's throw from Freed Hardeman College, which is just like a coiled mass of snakes. And I mean, you know, these are the weirdos. These were like. Well, here, okay. See, you've done it to me.
You do it.
Story from my upbringing. The high school that I attended had for a principal a guy who was a member of the Church of Christ.
Oh, my God.
The Church of Christ does not... Now, wait. The Church of Christ does not believe in dancing. They also don't believe in accompanying their hymn singing with musical instruments. I mean, not so much as a freaking tambourine.
Okay.
This guy was so strict and so straight-laced, he wasn't allowed to smoke at home, so he would sit in the principal's office and hork Chesterfields all day long. But he was the only, at the time I was there, he was the only principal my high school had ever had. We, because he was Church of Christ, we were not allowed to have a junior prom.
I saw a movie.
I mean, this is like Footloose stuff. The rest of the country was going, that had never happened. Hell, we were living it, Rick. And the fact of the matter was, we had to have a junior-senior banquet. We couldn't have a dance on school property, on publicly funded school property, because my principal was a religious weirdo.
Man.
Okay? Now, this is the same sect, Rick, where the guy, the preacher, got blown away by his wife. She shot him in the back with a shotgun, and all the cops will say is, infidelity was not the motive. Now, this guy's 31 years old. He's a fundamentalist preacher. They've got three little, one of them's almost pubescent daughters.
Yeah, I wonder what that story's going to shake out as.
Now, infidelity was not the issue.
Yes, right.
Okay, that leaves two motives. He was whomping her, or being a fundamentalist minister, he was doing what fundamentalist ministers do, and he was diddling the kids.
Yeah, that's my first guess. See, I always celebrate. I mean, you know, forgive me, America, but anytime I hear a cop died, a prison guard died, or a preacher died, well, you know, to me it's a holiday.
I can't go all the way on that.
Well, I always do. I do.
Martin Luther King was a preacher. Martin Luther King was a preacher. That was no cause for celebration.
No, see, we're talking different times. You can't mix Martin Luther. That's a red herring argument. We're not talking about Martin Luther King. We're talking about these creeps, you know. And Martin Luther King wasn't part of that.
Well, you know, I've long said that I would not leave my child within an arm's grasp of a Southern Baptist minister or a Church of Christ
or a Jehovah's Witness or a Catholic priest or a Pentecostal.
But I mean, the thing
we can name them all.
Sure, I won't leave them alone with them. Because they're dangerous. You know, in this story, I got, you know, the Washington Post story here. I got this line from the Tom DeLay saying that, where is it? Come on. DeLay says justices just don't get criticism.
Yeah, and he also lost his
and let's see, where is it? I got to find it. It's a beautiful quote. He says, you know, we live in a country where... Oh, dadgummit. He goes on, he said, we live in a country where we murder babies with abortion on demand and kill thousands of children every year.
All in Iraq.
Yeah, but that's, you know, those are the pre-born children. If after they're born, George Bush can send literally, you know, how lovely. The United States names its missiles Hellfire.
Yeah.
We can send Hellfire missiles right smack dab into, Omar's living room somewhere in Baghdad and blow his little children into their constituent pieces, and Tom DeLay can stand up in some filthy Southern Baptist church and say, I'm a Christian and them judges don't get it because we kill thousands of cheerings every year.
Yeah, well, it's white children. He don't care if you kill the black ones or the brown ones or the yellow ones. I mean,
red and yellow, black and white, they are precious in his sight. White ones.
Yeah, well, I got news for you. These people, don't get, I've said this to you before, don't ever, and I know you wouldn't, and so it's rhetorical. I'm saying it for everybody rhetorically. Don't ever get past the fact that every modern day neocon Republican is a Dixiecrat snob. He's an illiterate for the most part. And he's also a racist.
Okay, here's the line. Okay, here's the line from DeLay, Rick.
When the Dixiecrat had to disband because the Klan got busted up by the FBI.
Here's the lines from DeLay. We are, after all, a society that abides abortion on demand, that has killed millions of innocent children, that degrades the institution of marriage, and often treats Christianity like some second-rate superstition. If you believe that the world came to be as it is because a cavewoman had a conversation with a gossipy water moccasin, yeah, second-rate superstition, I'm right there.
Well, I am a Christian, and I'm proud to be one, and I believe in God, and I believe in a lot of parts of the Bible, and yeah, I don't believe in the inerrancy of the Bible, but I will tell you this much.
Well, how can you believe in the inerrancy in the Bible? I don't understand those people. The Bible was written by people who were barely literate.
You've got to have faith that God will make it clear to you, but I'm not going to preach to you. That's my thing.
Yeah,
I don't subscribe to these people's point of view, but I would not go a day, nor would I want to go a day, without being able to pray to God and thank Him for what He's done to me and for me and my children and my family and all my friends and this world. And I pray for this world every day. And so I don't have a problem with God. I got a problem with the freaks like DeLay and Bush and all these people that give God a bad name. And I hate them for it. And yet I still ask God to forgive them, so I can be forgiven. It's very complicated. But I have the faith. I have enough faith in what I believe where I don't care what they do.
Well,
I don't care what lies they tell.
No, see, I disagree with you, Rick, because I do care what they do. Because if Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson and James Dobson and all these weird little freaks running around Washington, D.C. right now had their way, they would hold a sword to my throat and say, believe, if we let them get away with it, they would hold a sword to my throat, a sword to your throat, a sword to Agnes's throat, and say, believe like we do, or Jesus says we get to kill you.
Okay, I misspoke, and you're right. And maybe I didn't have it in the proper context. I care what they do. What I was trying to say was it doesn't affect my faith.
Okay, well, that I'll buy. Hey, Rick, I got to roll on. I've got another call waiting. I enjoy the conversation. Don't worry.
Yeah, I and good night to you all. I love you all, man.
All right, take it easy.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Yeah, just one more quote from this article before we move much further forward, because this thing really does have, as a lovely... lovely lady I once knew who had grown up in the UK said, this has my knickers all in a twist. This is a quote from Don Feder, who was founder of a group called Jews Against Anti-Christian Defamation. Jacked, I guess. Jacked. He said he urged the crowd not to blame the liberal, self-hating Jews in Hollywood. Quote, remember, the people in this audience are more Jewish than people like Barbara Streisand because you embrace Jewish values. She doesn't. And let's see, here's a cretin named Michael Horowitz telling the crowd, you guys have become the Jews of the 21st century. Get hold of that with your brain for a second. Over 6 million Jews, Roma, and homosexuals were sent into ovens, were sent into showers and sprayed with Zyklon B, partially financed by the efforts of Prescott Bush. And these people think that they have some sort of moral... Tom DeLay has a moral equivalency with the people who were murdered in the Holocaust? Can you just, that is so offensive that it is difficult to give word to it. Now, Reverend Robert Franklin, again from the article, a minister in the Church of God in Christ and a professor of social ethics at Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia, said, quote, this is a skirmish over religious pluralism and this is the important part, and the inclination to see it as a war against Christianity strikes me as a spoiled brat response by Christians who have always enjoyed the privileges of a majority position. Christianity is protected in this country. It is impossible to persecute a Christian in the United States of America. Slamming a door in a weirdo's face does not constitute persecution. Telling some idiot standing on the street with some chick publications that you'd rather not have his little thing that he's going to go and leave in the men's room anyway is not persecution. Now, I guess some would say that I hate the Christians. No, I despise the religion industry, a gang of charlatan ripoff artists. And they have voted for, they have actively participated in, and the blood is on their hands for this Iraq war. And Tom DeLay has the nerve to stand up and say that there's some sort of moral equivalency over abortion. And I despise the abortion debate to begin with, because I don't have a uterus. Quick as I grow one, I'll have a comment about the abortion debate. I mean, that only seems to make sense. But, of course, it's always pasty-faced, doughy white dudes who, like Tom DeLay, you know, wants to get his concealed carry permit back because Jesus told him to carry a gun. You know, when who was it? Peter lopped off the ear of the Roman soldier. Jesus allegedly picked it up and slammed it up against the side of his head, and the ear grew back. but Tom DeLay wants his damn peace back. I just don't feel holy if I'm not packing heat. Oh, they're persecuted. And, you know, Jack Abramoff, off to prison today. That stupid thing with him walking out of the courtroom looking like Boris from Bullwinkle, Boris Badenov, with the black trench coat and the black hat, and the next day he shows up with a ball cap on. Oh, that was did you know that was a sign of his piety? Horse feathers. So pardon me if I get a little bent out of shape over a gang of ripoff artists who aren't even Americans and who don't pay taxes. Yeah, stop and chew on that for a minute. They don't pay taxes. Telling us that they're persecuted. They get every break that the American constitutional form of government can afford them, and then some, and they gotta wander around Washington, sitting around listening, you know, you're persecuted. Why, yes, just last week I was put on a spit and covered in olive oil and lit up. No, you weren't, were you? No, you're persecuted if somebody says no thank you to you when you, have you accepted Jesus Christ as your personal savior? No, you're persecuted if someone says, no, thank you, I am Hindu. That constitutes persecution. But it's a social thing. It's a cultural thing. It's the same thing that goes on where we talk about a war on drugs. We have weakened and watered the word war to the point that it is meaningless to us. We run wars like video games, and we don't allow the consequences of war to be seen when they come home. Do you remember the story? Sure you do. About the bodies being unloaded with forklifts in cardboard boxes? Away from the eyesight of humanity and the American electorate? But we have a war on Christmas. You know, these are the same people that said there was a war on Christmas. They're liars. They, given the opportunity, they would joyfully re-crucify Christ. You know, so yeah, it does matter to me what these freaks do. Because they mean us no good. If you don't believe, I mean, if you are a good, liberal, jubilee-based Roman Catholic, and you believe that social justice is important based upon the teachings of Jesus Christ, you're no good. If you're a member of the United Churches of Christ, not the freak churches of Christ, the United Churches of Christ, if you're a member of the United Churches of Christ and you believe that God doesn't discriminate against people based on what happens when the lights go off, you're no good. There's Tom DeLay, who has done everything in his power to corrupt every institution he has ever laid his hands on, starting with his insecticide business. Who interfered in the death of Terry Schiavo when only a couple of years before he had made the same blessed decision about his own father. Oh, ye generation of vipers. Let's go to the phones. Bob's with us from North Dakota. Hey, Bob, you're head on.
Praise Jesus.
And pass the ammunition.
Are you on your knees?
No.
Good.
I don't do the knees thing.
Good. Stand on your feet and look them in the eye and tell them the truth. But I was thinking, you know, there was something that you just said, okay? Something about persecuting.
Mm-hmm.
Or persecution.
Yeah. They've got a persecution complex. It's psychologically identifiable.
Well,
they're sick
me.
In the head.
They're after me, right?
Yeah.
Well, Bob, what happens when we really get after them, okay? Then they can, we'll dip them in olive oil and light the Appian Way with them. I'm tired of this. I'm being persecuted stuff. I want to persecute them.
It's tempting, isn't it?
I'm tired of this. I'm being persecuted.
You know, I understand that, Bob, because the inclination is to look at some of these freaks that went to this little freak inn and say, fellas,
what I heard.
Come on over here. I'm going to persecute you.
No, I like what I heard this weekend. This uh, this you know, this freakoid that's running around the country at veterans' funerals.
Oh, Fred Phelps?
Yeah, that one.
Yeah, ordained Baptist minister Fred Phelps?
Yeah, and his, you know, Mike was talking about him, and I thought, yeah, that's what they are, you know, and they're being persecuted. Hey, I like that 400 bikers. I mean, 400 bikers revved their engines, and they couldn't shut them up, so they took sticks and stones and chased them down to the river. I like that.
Yeah.
You know, I like the idea of just getting some sticks and stones and...
And breaking all Old Testament on them.
Yeah, breaking all Old Testament on them. And get thee hence thy what? Thy foul and evil spirit?
Yeah.
Get thee hence and start with Falwell and Dobson and all those so righteous preachers. Let's just chase them down to the river.
Well, I'll tell you this much, though. I mentioned it early on, Bob. If this freak, Rod Parsley, gets away with subverting the 501c3 charitable organization rules,
yeah,
I'm going to set me up one. And I'm gonna politic from my little pulpit for 3 hours a night, and I'm gonna solicit donations, brother.
Preach to me, brother, and I'll give you some donations.
Yeah.
You know, do what you gotta do.
Yeah, can I get an amen, brother Bob?
Amen.
Thank you, brother
amen,
Bob.
Brother Bob. Brother Bob to brother Bob, right?
Yeah. Gets a little confusing.
The thing is, Bob, we have to stop being nice guys.
Yeah, no.
They depend on us being nice guys. They want us to be Democrats. They want us to be liberals. Now, it's time that we stop being that. I mean, stop being toaster people.
Yeah, well, you know, it's like the T-shirt that my lovely wife has.
Mm. Yes.
It says so many Christians, so few lions.
what's that one that they got there on Buzz Flash? It comes out. They come out every week with another hypocrite of the week.
Yeah, the GOP hypocrite of the week.
Yeah, and I download them.
Now, I'll tell you what, the T-shirt I want, though, is the one with the Bible quote from whatever it is, Leviticus or Deuteronomicus or Flip-Floppians or whatever, that says...
Don't do that to me. Please, Bob.
I'm sorry.
Don't do that to me.
But it's a direct quote from the Bible, and it says, stone disobedient children.
No. Disobedient children... are the only ones with any brains.
Well, it's about coming to that, isn't it? Hey, Bob, we got to get out of here. We're at
all
the
right,
top of the hour,
right,
brother.
Hey, no, I want to say this.
Say this. Okay, say
Agnes
it.
Agnes has to speak.
Agnes will speak.
Agnes has to speak.
It's not like I've got her muzzled, Bob.
No, but she has something to say to all of us.
And she will. And she will, but we got
to
get out of here.
Okay.
Later, brother.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. I'm sorry. Sometimes my passions get away from me. And I guess this was one of those moments. But if you want to get involved in the conversation, I welcome you to. It's 877, the number 4, head on. I'm Bob Kincaid.
On Radio News, I'm John Fox. Add one more to George Bush's list of excuses for his failed Iraq occupation. Now, it's Saddam's fault. Bush said, quote, "The enemies of a free Iraq are employing the same tactics Saddam used, killing and terrorizing the Iraqi people in an effort to foment sectarian division," unquote. Democrat Senator Reid points out
quote, "The president can give all the speeches he wants, but nothing will change the fact that his Iraq policy is wrong," unquote. And he continues, quote, "2 weeks ago, he told the American people that Iraqis would control their country by the end of the year. But last week, he told us our troops would be there till at least 2009, unquote. Influence peddler Jack Abramoff gets nearly 6 years in prison. Abramoff, the disgraced lobbyist at the heart of a Washington influence peddling scandal that has ripped top Republicans, was sentenced to nearly 6 years in prison on Wednesday for fraud in the purchase of a Florida casino cruise line. Representative George Miller said, quote, "Jack Abramoff broke the law, and now he is going to pay the price for it." But complete justice will not be served until all of Abramoff's activities and connections are exposed and all of his partners in crime are punished, unquote. Unbeknownst to the rest of us, Christianity is under attack, or so says Rick Scarborough. In a two-day conference in Washington, titled War on Christians and the Values Voters in 2006, with upstanding fraudsters like Tom DeLay in the list of speakers, DeLay said, quote, "We are, after all, a society that abides abortion on demand, that has killed millions of innocent children, that degrades the institution of marriage and often treats Christianity like some second-rate superstition. Seen from this perspective, of course, there is a war on Christianity," unquote. The Associated Press reports the Florida Attorney General's office has issued investigative subpoenas to the three companies certified to sell voting machines in Florida. Attorney General Charlie Crist is reviewing a dispute between the firms and Leon County's election supervisor. Diebold Election Systems and Software, and Sequoia Voting Systems have refused to sell equipment to let disabled voters cast ballots without help in Leon County. Election Supervisor Eon Sancho has been outspoken about his concern that the devices can be easily manipulated to change race outcomes. The company's refusal has left Leon County, the home of the state capital, in violation of the federal Help America Vote Act. An American Muslim was sentenced Wednesday to 30 years in prison for joining al-Qaeda and plotting to assassinate George Bush. Ahmed Omar Abu Ali, a 25-year-old U.S. citizen who was born to a Jordanian father and raised in Falls Church, Virginia, faced a mandatory minimum of 20 years in prison and a maximum of life behind bars. This is news on the Horn.
The major record labels say that downloading music from the internet is stealing, stealing, stealing. But according to these people, making a mixtape for your friend is stealing too. So is making a tape of a radio show.
Home radio. We play the songs that sound more like everyone else than anyone else.
When a rock band plays an AC/DC cover at a bar that doesn't pay ASCAP, that's stealing. Or have you ever sung happy birthday to your friend at a restaurant?
Warning!
Happy birthday is copyrighted. So if you're singing in a public place, you better be paying royalties or you'll be stealing music. Does all this stuff about stealing music sound absurd? Would you rather have a world where our music culture wasn't the intellectual property of five corporations? Then stop giving them your money and make sure your friends and family don't either. Better yet, try burning them a CD. If we pull the plug on major labels, music gets better. Find out more about what you can do. Check out downhillbattle.org.
The UN Security Council has unanimously called on Iran to suspend uranium enrichment activities within 30 days and cooperate with the International Atomic Energy Agency, the UN's nuclear watchdog. The vote came after five permanent members of the council reached an agreement on the draft document, which was written by the British and French. Iran remains defiant. The government released a statement through its embassy in Moscow on Tuesday warning that Security Council intervention would, quote, escalate tensions, entailing negative consequences that would be of benefit to no party, unquote. In Baghdad, gunmen dressed like Iraqi police commandos burst into a Baghdad trading company Wednesday, killing five innocent male and three innocent female employees. Six guards were also wounded at the Iqbar Trading Company in western Baghdad's upscale Mansour Market. The slayings were the last in a string of attacks and abductions this week in the Iraq capital as Sunni-Shiite sectarian tensions boil over and crime spreads, leaving business owners and employees on the edge. The Bush administration continues to deny that there is civil war. Federal officials are investigating a third close call in less than a week involving planes at O'Hare International Airport. On March 21st, two planes were mistakenly instructed to take off at the same time on crisscrossing runways. 2 days later, a plane was sent to taxi across the runway where another plane had already started its takeoff roll. The National Transportation Safety Board, which typically responds to fatal accidents, considered both significant enough to dispatch investigators to O'Hare. The latest incident involved two commercial planes preparing to take off on crisscrossing runways on Sunday. An Airbus A320 plane had been cleared for takeoff but was told to abort 4 seconds later because another plane had been readying for takeoff on an intersecting runway. The Federal Aviation Administration said FAA officials said Tuesday they were trying to determine whether the two planes got closer than allowed by federal rules. This is News on the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're Head-On with Bob Kincaid.
And we're back, magically. Even though we never went anywhere, you've got to take it on faith. That's a joke. All right, then, let's go back to the phones. Peter has been waiting a long, long time while we sorted some of this stuff out. Hey, Peter, you're Head-On.
Hey, Bob, I got to tell you, man, this topic about the persecuted Christian has been bothering me for weeks now. One of the things I do at our little church is I have to type up the prayer list every Sunday, and we print it and put it in the bulletin and what have you. And it just without fail for the last at least 2 months, every week somebody is wanting to put on the prayer list the persecuted Christians or the persecuted church. Well, I just never put it on there. There's no way I'm going to put that on there. It just goes against every. These people have no idea what persecution is, and it ties in so closely to the what we were talking about the other night. The whiny child who ends up being conservative. It's just so typical. These people are white, middle class. They have no clue what the black experience is or what the experience of the American Indian is or any other group of people who are marginalized in this society. And it's just really getting to the point that my anger level is just really off the chart.
Well, you know, Peter, I think some of this, in all honesty, has to do with I call it fraud, phony, whatever. But, you know, there's that verse in there about, and you will be persecuted in my name's sake. And there are people out there that are of such weak spirit and such weak mind that they feel like that the only way that they get to call themselves Christians is if someone has been mean to them. So, persecution to them is when the grocery store doesn't have their brand of toilet paper.
Well, Bob, that's a good perspective, and I see where you're coming from. Unfortunately, they do not live a closely examined life. And to actually walk the walk, you've got to examine your life and see and have a look at the things that are actually true. I mean, these people can wear their crosses in public. They can sit on a park bench and read the Bible.
They can stand on a street corner and scream in tongues to the high heavens.
And they can stand at a funeral of a gay man and scream fags are all going to burn in hell. They can do any damn thing they want to. Furthermore, let me get this straight. We have a right-wing House, a right-wing Senate. We have a right-wing presidency, a right-wing judiciary, and these bastards are claiming they're persecuted?
It does kind of make you run and scream, I know.
Oh, Jesus. And the history of the
entire federal government is the Sanhedrin right now, okay?
Well, yes. Yeah.
I don't know if anybody's, I'm sure they probably stoned them to death if they tried, but if you stood up in front of these freaks, Peter, and you said, guys, it's people with your mindset who crucified Christ in the first place.
Well, this is absolutely true. And
they'd kill you for saying it.
If throughout history the Christian church has always been the aggressor, time after time, to move in everything from the Spanish Inquisition down to the Crusades, it just never ceases to amaze me. And to sit and whine that they're persecuted just really rubs me the wrong way.
Well, up until the middle of the 20th century, the church, the organized church, be it Protestant, Catholic, or whatever, in large part, I've got the example of what I've got around me here. do you realize that in the days when labor was, you know, when working people in the coal industry were trying to stand up on their own hind legs and demand that they be treated like human beings?
There you go. That's persecution.
That's persecution. When the, you know, when the coal company drives a train down through your coal camp village and shoots and uses machine guns to shoot into houses and butchers pregnant women, that's persecution.
That's persecution.
Now,
what is it, 15 years without a minimum wage increase? That's persecution.
Right. Now, back up. At the time that those trains were running through the coal camps, Peter, guess who was signing the paycheck of the preacher every week?
Dear God, don't tell me the damn coal company.
Yes, Lord, yes.
Jesus Christ.
And they stood in the pulpit and they screamed that... That there was a plague upon the land, unionism, Bolshevism, and it was heathen, and it was atheist, and it was unchristian.
Jesus Christ, Bob. Oh, Jesus wept.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not making this up. I mean, this is real. The churches were hand in hand. Now you got to get to the point where a young minister by the name of Martin Luther King steps up for Rosa Parks, and as Jeff Biggers noted when we interviewed him, me and that mouse in my pocket, when I interviewed Jeff Biggers, they had both been to the Highland School, and they had learned the religious value and the religious teachings of Jesus Christ, and they took them home, and they began to teach their brothers and sisters that it's not a matter of social control, that Jesus was a radical. You know, a guy who's playing in the systems, doesn't take a cat of nine tails and whop the living snot out of a bunch of money changers in the temple.
Absolutely, you're telling it true, and I am so glad you're addressing this issue.
Well, I mean, we play around and we have our Wednesday night prayer meeting and stuff, but you know, this was just the timing was, it was almost preordained. Oh my God, did I say that?
Glory, hallelujah.
Yay, verily. Give me an amen, Brother Peter.
Oh, well, Bob, I didn't have much, but man, you just hit every hot button I own tonight, dude. I had, it is just so perfect to segue into the whiny little kids that I'm being persecuted. Did they grow up to be a, you know, I'm not for drowning whiny children in the bathtub.
No.
But we're going to have to intervene somehow.
Well, I don't know. Maybe if you persecute a few, then they'll, I'm being mean again. Then that would be real persecution. But on the other hand, letting these people walk around, everything is given to them. The First Amendment of the Constitution, and the first thing mentioned, we talked about how many people remember the freedoms in the First Amendment. There's five of them. And the first one is religion.
Well,
it's the single most protected practice, protected activity in all of the American polis.
This is true.
George Mason, bless their little hearts. I hope they do win the national championship. George Mason University is named after a man who refused. He was a refusenik of his time. He refused to sign off on the Constitution of the United States until religious and speech and domestic security freedoms were enshrined in that document.
Absolutely, and the pathos of the whole thing is that. They're whining simply because they can't control everything. They want to oppress people. They want to take away people's rights. They want control of everything. They don't want the separation of church and state to go away. And the more that's resisted, the louder they whine that it's persecution. It's a lie.
Yeah. And of course, you've got the right wingers like Tom Tancredo and Tom DeLay, and they're both good Christians, and they're hollering that immigrants are somehow demonic or something, and the law that Tom Tancredo and Jim Sensenbrenner wanted to put through would have criminalized the Christian who reached out and fed a starving immigrant. It would have made criminals out of them. And now, how far does this go? I mean, we all know how the Catholic Church behaved during the 2004 election with all the stupidity about how, I wouldn't give John Kerry communion.
Yeah,
he couldn't.
That was way over the top. That
yeah,
was
he
so
couldn't.
Far over the edge. There's no words for it.
Yeah, he couldn't have the sacred saltine. And so the Cardinal Mahoney, I think, is the dude's name in Los Angeles. He said that if the House of Representatives, if the Congress passed and the president signed that hateful bill, he would make it a matter of holy whatever it is in the church that every one of his parishioners within whatever you call a cardinal has, that they disobeyed that statute in the name of Jesus Christ.
And quite rightly.
Yeah. I mean, I don't get him. I can't have a conversation with him. You can't. You can't, Peter. Well, I mean, you probably come closer than anybody else in this audience because you try really hard with that little church, and I know how much you pour your heart into it.
Well, I do, and part of the reason I go there every Sunday is simply to be seen. I mean, I just refuse to go away, and not that I'm not welcome there. It's just that I think that, you know, we need to have a presence that says that there's another kind of Christian that walks around this planet. And
I'm not correcting you or anything, but don't think for a minute that that's another kind of Christian, because the people we are talking about aren't.
There you go. Well, you well said. Well said. That upsets me too, this whole redefinition of the word Christian. I'm so damn tired of having to explain what that means.
Well, now, you know, I mean, according to America now, a Christian is somebody who sends hellfire missiles into people's residences for no good reason.
Well, this is true. Because God told them to.
Because God told them to.
Why?
Mean guy, that God.
Never has the...
Well, check this out. We've got Agnes has something here, and I think she'd like to share it. This is a good time to share it, if you don't mind, Peter.
Great.
Peter, I think you'll enjoy this.
Good, Agnes. I could use a little Agnes love. Tell me something I need to hear.
Yeah, this was good, because the other night I was looking through my children's papers, and, of course, you know, we have our own little gaggle of children. So they brought this home from their youth group. Now, I'm not sure if this is an internet thing or if someone in the church actually sat down and thought this up, which, God, I'm hoping they didn't. But it's Satan's Beatitudes.
This is what they gave my children, our children,
this is
at
little,
the local
this
Baptist
is,
church.
This is little
well,
children.
Okay. So
Satan's Beatitudes.
Oh, but wait. It gets better.
Okay,
number one. Blessed are those who are too tired, too busy, too distracted to spend an hour once a week with their fellow Christians. They're my best workers.
This is Satan talking here.
I see.
Blessed are the Christians who wait to be asked and expect to be thanked.
This is heresy, too, just to have rewritten it.
But it gets better.
Oh.
Blessed are those Christians who wait to be asked and expected to be thanked. I can use them. Blessed are the touchy who stop going to church. They're my missionaries. Blessed are the troublemakers. They shall be called my children. Blessed are the complainers. I'm all ears to them. Blessed are those bored with the minister's mannerisms and mistakes, for they get nothing of his sermons. All right!
God forbid you should see through it.
Oh, but yeah. Blessed is the church member who expects to be invited to his own church, for he's part of the problem instead of the solution. Blessed are those who gossip, for they shall cause strife and division that pleases me. Blessed are those who are easily offended, for they will soon get angry and quit. Blessed are those who do not give their offering to carry on God's work, for they are my helpers. Blessed is he who professes to love God, but hates his brother and sister, for he shall be with me forever. Blessed are you who, when you read this, think it's about other people and not yourself. I've got you too. Yes. Now, this was given to a 9-year-old.
And this is from your school?
No,
this was from the church.
From the church.
Oh, but wait. Let me read you my reply.
No, wait. Well, wait. We've got people on hold, dear.
Oh, okay.
And we've got to take a break. But
okay.
Do you see what we're up against?
Well, yes. The fact that it was even rewritten is horrifying to begin with. It's to substitute some trite... I just can't take it.
But they're speaking for the devil, and they're telling a 9-year-old at the end, blessed are you who, when you read this, think it's about other people and not yourself. I've got you too. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're giving this to a 9-year-old, and even within the erstwhile doctrine of that particular species of religion, Peter.
Species, perfect.
The children they were giving this to haven't even reached what, as Baptists, I was raised to call the age of accountability. A child cannot belong to Satan.
Well, I tell you what, if you want to see the reply, go to
You put it on headonradionetwork.com. That's where you blogged it, dear.
There, too.
Okay.
And WD40.com.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Peter, thank you so much.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you, guys. God bless you.
God bless you, too.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
And a quick break, and when we come back, more of your phone calls. And if you want to jump in and fill up the rest of the lines, that would be cool, too. 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to.
A group of U.S. businessmen in the UAE said they will invite the Oprah Winfrey Show and other talk shows to the Gulf to change American public opinion, which has helped block Dubai's takeover of 6 U.S. ports. He's saying that they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States and explain why the UAE is important. If you want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, they need to send something, not Oprah. I mean, how many average guys do you know watch Oprah? I don't. If they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, as much as I hate to say it, they need to send Jerry Springer and the Jerry Springer Show over there with the bald guy. You know, maybe they can do a UAE version of My Grandmother Is Also My Lover or something like that. Oh, that's just a...
Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
Lottie in the chat room has fixed himself some stuffed pork chops with apple raisin walnut chuck.
You, me, Grace, Rama.
Mango chutney.
Hey, speaking of that,
it's all you need.
Mustard seed?
Mustard seed, yeah. That article.
It's not the same as mustard gas.
Well, it's pretty close. Mustard gas.
Join
mustard
Grace
gas
and Rama, homebodies, Sunday evenings, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network. It's food for thought.
Friends, drugs and alcohol were the only friends I had. Then a real friend got me into a treatment center. It wasn't easy. Drug and alcohol addiction is a horrible disease. But I got better. I got my friends back, and I got my life back. Treatment taught me what a true friend really is.
For drug and alcohol information and treatment referral for you or someone you know, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Because liberals built America. Head on with Bob Kincaid.
All right, then, we're back. And let's do keep the phone thing going. You know, I always get that Monty Python thing with them hitting themselves in the head with the board. Never mind. Luke is with us from Knoxville, Tennessee. Hey, Luke, you're head on.
Hi, Bob.
How you doing?
Oh, God, there's so many different directions to go. It's hard to know which one to go after on this stuff, I tell you.
Throw a dart.
Well, let's see. Start off with, well, we saw Bush was out rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic again.
That man's lost his mind, Luke.
Well, the thing against me is, I saw the thing the other night before with Jon Stewart, and he was like, and the guy you get is the guy who was in charge of the $9 trillion of debt.
Oh, I know. But did you see the thing today?
Which one?
Well, his appearance before he got on his big jet, big old jet airliner and flew off to Cancun.
That was, don't you, though? The other thing? Yeah. Basically enough, this is the exact same time the Democrats are having their meeting saying how they're going to be tough on defense. Well, Bush decides to hold this press conference. So guess what got coverage?
Oh, sure. But I tell you what, I don't think they wanted the coverage.
Well, I know. From what I've seen of it, it's sort of like, did anybody think these things through?
I saw a screenshot of him at Democratic Underground, Luke, that would just make you fall on your knees, talking about, you know, prayer meeting stuff, fall on your knees and just pray that's because he's scary.
Oh, I tell you something I saw. Talk about prayer meeting and all that just got me thinking about. I was listening today on the radio and they were talking about this thing with about Charles Taylor. And amazingly enough, he got caught just before the new president was meeting with Bush.
Yeah, Olusegun Obasanjo.
Yeah, I'm just sitting there going, somewhere down the line, can we see Pat Robertson be extradited?
Oh yeah, because he was business partners with Charles Taylor.
I'm just sitting there going, I'd just love to see them have to take Robertson, make Bush's people take Robertson into custody.
Well, yeah, and it was a diamond mine operation, wasn't
uh-huh.
it, Luke?
I sort of like, gosh, just please do that. That would just be so much fun, and then we'd hear about the persecution by the Bush administration.
Wouldn't you love that? No, but today the George was talking about, I'm going down to Mexico. Cancun, no Speedos for me.
Thank God for that, at least.
Well, yeah, but the President of the United States was talking about Speedos.
The only thing is, if he's going in the water, I want him to wear his lucky ham. That's all I'm
saying. yeah, him and his...
Shark, jellyfish, I don't care, whichever one wants him.
Yeah, George going swimming out with his favorite chum.
Here, we'll put the suntan lotion on you. Smells sort of like blood.
No, but seriously, he went on and was just losing his mind. I expected him to take a shoe off and start beating the podium. Yeah, I went over and I met with Japanese Prime Minister Koizumi, and who'd have imagined? I mean, thanks to the policy, and my daddy fought against the Japanese, and now we're friends. And you know.
That's the only thing I want is I want whoever's got the football, I want a padlock on that thing.
Well, yeah, exactly. And
I want somebody else to have the keys.
You know, the story comes out that we had a chance to work toward disarmament with Iran in 2003, but the neocons said no because it would be bad for our war effort.
Well, just remember, you know, during the Clinton administration, they did all this stuff on disarmament. Gore was in charge of part of that, you know, and they did a whole lot. First thing, well, you know, Bush comes in. Well, we're stopping that. I mean, dear God, how can we be out there disarming the nukes? My God.
Well, did you catch Gary Hart's appearance on the Colbert Report the other evening?
No, afraid not. Oh, shoot.
And, he talked briefly, Gary Hart did, about the fact that, you know, how many people, Colbert does a beautiful Bill O'Reilly.
Oh, he does it so good it's scary. It really is.
And so Colbert was taking him over the coals for being a cowardly Democrat. And Gary Hart said, well, you know, we were catching terrorists and we were fighting terrorists under the Clinton administration. And, well, yeah, you prove it. He says, well, you know, we did a report, Warren Rudman and me, the Hart-Rudman report, and we gave it to George Bush and just sat there and it was surgical. It was absolutely surgical, Luke.
Well, you know, it's the thing, you know, they were talking, what was it? They said, you know, that, you know, when they first came in, they put Cheney supposedly in charge of the terrorism problem. You know what I mean?
Right.
And they said that the only time he met with the Bush, with the Clinton people on their way out, the only thing he wanted to know about was Iraq.
Yeah.
That was his one and
that's
only
the
topic.
That's the big hot book that's out now called Cobra 2. And it, Cheney specifically asked for a briefing with outgoing Defense Secretary Cohen.
Yeah.
Cohen from Maine. And the only thing.
Andy Berger and.
Yeah, the only thing Cheney wanted to hear about was a good reason to go kill Iraq.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the thing of it is, most people, you know, that just kind of gets lost under the whole thing. You know, they just keep the static going in the background, so you can't hear anybody talk about those things. I mean, you were talking about this, I think, last night or the night before. Said, you know, about somebody putting together a list of all the scandals.
Yeah,
and you know, actually, they hadn't even got up. They hadn't even got up to September 11th, and it was already, you know, 2-3 hours long.
It was, yeah, it was like 3-4 pages before you got to September 11th.
Yeah. So they're like, well, you know, things change September. This is before September 11th.
Yeah, and I mean, how many of us have even bothered to still remember how embarrassed we were when he apologized to the Chinese and said, and if you don't give our plane back now that I've apologized, I'll apologize again. You remember that? Remember the Chinese spy plane scandal? You know, that's like small potatoes now.
What was the old thing? Stop me, or I'll say stop again.
Yeah, right. And then there, you know, in March of 2001, it was we're reviving President Reagan's missile defense system.
Oh gosh!
And then within a month's time, we found out that they were cheating. They were cheating on the test because the only way they could shoot down the other missile was by putting a radio transponder on it.
Yeah. And put in a homing beacon so the missile could lock onto it. It's like, okay, how are we going to get the enemies to do it? That's my question. Come on, how are we going to get them to put them in there for us?
Right. Yeah. And the defense contractor said, well, you know, this is it's a learning process.
It's sort of like, well, yeah, we learned it for 20 years. And, you know, it's like this thing, you know, where they were talking recently about, you know, wanting to push back up with the nuclear energy. Well, it's like saying down here in the Tennessee Valley, we just got done paying off Reagan's last. You know,
well, exactly. I mean, you know, I'd
paying off the breeder reactor and the whole nine yards.
Oh God, the breeder reactor! I hadn't heard that phrase in a Brazilian years.
There's a nice concrete slab.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
we caused us
Well, see, I grew up 18 miles from Brown's Ferry.
Oh yes, indeed.
You know, the one where they went looking for gas leaks with a lighted candle. You know, we were minutes from, you know, Chernobyl, long before there was a Chernobyl.
Well, that was the thing was they were putting it together, and they had no clue what exactly it was going to do, and they got it put together. That was the thing. It was like,
and, you know, Witta's Creek, and the funny thing is, very few people know, Luke, what the nuclearization of the Tennessee Valley Authority did.
It gutted us for 20 years.
Well, yeah, I mean, where I grew up, there was Reynolds Metals, there was Ford, Diamond Shamrock, Union Carbide, huge industries,
mm-hmm.
because it was literally the cheapest power in the United States because it was sitting hard by the Tennessee River. Wilson Dam was there. Wheeler Dam was a little further upriver, and it was just this constant, steady stream of virtually free electricity.
Yeah. And the thing was, most people didn't know it because, you know, and so the companies that were there virtually didn't have to share it with almost anybody. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, there was so much to go around it. I mean, a power bill was nothing where I grew up when I was a kid. And then the TVA got the wise idea that they were going to go nuclear. And they went nuclear. See what he does to me? They went nuclear and had outrageous costs, and the next thing you know, the great Reagan depression, the great Reagan recession, whatever you want to call it, was funneled by or was fueled by none other than the TVA nuclear program. And the next thing you know, the only place in North America that had higher unemployment than the Shoals area of Alabama was Detroit, Michigan.
And, well, I mean, the thing was, they had to jump up the TVA price of power to pay for the damn stuff.
Exactly. So all that cheap hydroelectric, and Reynolds went away, and Ford went away, and Carbide went away. Everything died.
Mm-hmm. It's just one of those things. It's like, what's the old saying goes, you know, those who forget history are doomed to repeat it again.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
It was pathetic. I mean, because...
the thing is, you know, now we're having this thing with Halliburton. Just remember, I mean, back then, that's when they had the same problem, was you had all these contractors and all this stuff that were charging them out the wazoo, you know, for everything they did.
Right.
And I mean, what was it? I just recently saw Henry Waxman. Somebody was talking the other day, said Henry Waxman and this thing with the house where they were putting out the thing, showing how much Halliburton had overcharged.
Oh, yeah, 26 million on one pop alone.
Uh-huh. Then they said, well, the next year the State Department put out this thing saying everything was fine. It's like, this is the State Department. They haven't got nothing to do with it.
No, nothing.
All they're doing is sitting there going, well, this is good PR.
You know, they're just evil. They're just evil, pure and simple. And they're thieves. You know, from time to time, Luke, I ask the question, you know, what would you do if you caught a burglar in your house?
It's one of those things that when hopefully in 2006, but hopefully again in 2008, and they finally start. Of course, like we said, that whenever Bush has to leave, they're going to start the barbecues up, burning records. But still, I would love to see all the records, see what all.
Oh, the shredders will be going overtime.
Oh, It's like I say, because I just hate to imagine what money has been spent, has been wasted, of course.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? That we're going to find out going down the line. It's like, you spent this for this?
I know.
I mean,
it's like the Casper Weinberger dying thing from yesterday. You know, that evil old so-and-so shuffled off this mortal coil, and yet so much, you know, we don't realize it as Americans, Luke, because we have the long-term memory of a crawdaddy.
Well, it's like this evening. I came home, turned on the TV just for the end of Hardball, first show through it. And at the end of it, he's like, well, a real patriot, Casper Weinberger. I just...
No, he didn't.
Yes, he did. Oh, yeah, at the very end of it, he had like one of the guys from the Washington Post and Isikoff on. So at the very end, he's talking to them, and then that's at the very end, he's talking to them about that, and I'm like, you can't say the words higher in conscience. They'll burn if you try to say them out of your mouth. Your tongue catches on fire, doesn't it?
Yeah, George H.W. Bush had to pardon Casper Weinberger keep from going to prison himself.
Him and was Admiral Zumwalt.
Elmo Zumwalt and Admiral John Poindexter, John Negroponte, Elliot Abrams, Manuchehr Gorbani Farr, Oliver North, you know, and yet I tuned in the Fox and Comedy Central are one number away on my TV. And so
that.
I ran across, and bang, there's Ollie North talking about the illegality of the NSA spying program. You know, and I'm looking over at Agnes going, honey, did you put LSD in my dinner again? Because
did you get the right mushrooms this time, honey?
Because when I hear Oliver North saying that the NSA spying program's illegal, no, it wasn't the NSA spy. It was torture. That torture didn't do any good. This was Ollie North saying this. And when I hear Ollie North saying this kind of stuff, I figure the walls are going to start breathing pretty quick.
It's like saying we had on another part of the world, they had the eclipse today. So I was like, well, tomorrow the sun's coming up in the east, just for the fun of it.
Yeah, well, you know,
with the gang
that's having their little meeting up in Washington, D.C., I'm sure that they thought that the sun stood still in the sky just like it did in the Old Testament.
Well, it's one of those things. It's like, some of this stuff, when you watch this stuff, you just kind of wonder up there, should we just wall off Washington, D.C. and say, let's just start again somewhere else?
Yeah. Warning, poison.
Sorry, this is a hazmat zone. We're just going to close this off, make it, you know, fold it in on itself, and we'll come back in 10 centuries and try again.
Exactly. Hey, Luke, thanks so much for your call. I appreciate your
See
time,
you,
and thanks for all your thoughts. Bye now.
Bye.
And rolling onward to our buddy Jim. Hey, Jim, you're head on.
God, y'all are full of it tonight.
No, I reckon. But, you know, it's not without reason.
Oh, I understand. Well, you know, in reference to Ollie North, I told you a long time ago that he's always been sort of an unusual person. If you don't believe it, look at the Alexandria police blotter a couple decades ago when he was found running naked through the streets.
What was that? Was he trying to set up his insanity defense by doing that, do you suppose?
No, he was just drunk, and he was all messed up on something, and he decided to take off, I guess, down King Street or someplace in Alexandria, and they all together. Maybe he was trying to...
Yeah, I don't want to take that visual too awfully
far, Jim.
Well,
maybe he was trying to reenact the original Olympics. Who knows?
I know.
Yeah, I heard the Satanic Beatitudes. That's pretty interesting. If your wife quoted.
Yeah, and straight out of the church.
Well, you know, as I told her, basically, when they write stuff like that, they basically follow the doctrines of the Hitler Youth, and they try to get kids at a very early age when they're most impressionable.
Well, you know, thank God that our kids have parents like Agnes and me to come home to who can look at them and go, you know, babies, you're not going there anymore, and those people are religiously insane.
Well, you know, maybe you need to, as I told Agnes, I think she needs to look for another denomination. You
well,
know,
the problem,
like,
I mean,
like the Episcopal Church or something like that, if I could suggest.
We might go find those. Because
not all Christian churches are of that ilk and produce things like that.
Well, I heard the local.
I mean, what do you expect from some of the Baptists around here?
Well, I know. You know, I would give anything if there was a United Churches of Christ around here. You know, the Episcopals, that's a thought. There is an Episcopal church around here. In fact, a dear friend of mine's mom passed away recently, and the local Episcopal Grand Apostle or whatever he was preached part of the funeral. And I thought, you know, I could probably spend a few, I could spend an hour on Sunday with this guy.
Well, that'd be your deacon.
Well, I mean, he was a priest of some sort. He had the collar.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, basically he is, okay. Well, he's basically the, I don't know who that would be. That would be the rector here in Beckley.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I think he is the rector.
Well, and then, of course, in him you have a church hierarchy, but there are other Christian churches that do not subscribe to such fundamentalist beliefs. And I told Agnes that people who write stuff like this basically are the ones who would have snored right through the Sermon on the Mount, in my opinion.
Well, I mean, if you sit down and you compare, Jim, the real Beatitudes with, hand them to me here, Agnes. I mean, the idea of a Baptist church, any church, writing in the name of Satan, that turns my stomach to begin with, and then I get, and then I just, for the fun of it, I called up the real Beatitudes.
Oh, I know what you're saying.
And it's not even close.
No, not really, but I mean, the format is just used basically to, I think, mislead young people who are at a very impressionable age.
And again, I say, you know, at least my kids, our kids, have someone who can sort of straighten them out. Can you imagine the poor children that left from that with that in their hands and went home and didn't have anybody?
Well, I'm sure one of those poor children's parents probably crafted that document or found it, posted it somewhere.
Yeah, I'm sure this was found on the Internet or something.
Yeah. By the way, speaking of religious zealots, how's our old friend Fred Phelps doing?
You know, I saw where the Congress of the United States is actually taking up a funeral protest bill.
Now, what are you talking about?
Well, you know, several state legislatures have done that, Jim, to keep Fred Phelps's evil Baptist crowd away from soldiers' funerals or miners' funerals or whatever.
Well, they ought to. I mean, every time I think of Fred Phelps, I say, Albert Anastasia, where are you now that we need you?
Yeah, I know.
You know, really. I mean, I've never seen such an apostle of hate in my life, or hatred.
But now apparently it's being considered on a national level.
Well, I mean, this man has been so outrageous, and he has been so, and I think his sin's so egregious that, you know, it's time that it's like William Randolph Hearst said about Mae West, this time Congress did something about him, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think that may be happening because this will be a bill crafted specifically for him because it will mandate, I forget what the exact distances are, but it will mandate that...
How about from here to the moon?
Well, yeah, but I think it's like 50 feet or 100 feet away from any funeral for all protesters. And the thing is, it'll probably survive constitutional muster because it is a reasonable time, place, and manner restriction.
Well, I mean, if you saw the documentary, The Laramie Project.
Oh, I have seen that.
Well, you saw what he was saying there, and it was just absolutely horrible. Well, moving on, another thing, Iran.
Yes.
Now, we have a 30-day suspense on Iran.
That's right.
And we've given them an ultimatum. And it's no small wonder to me that they announced their reply to that ultimatum from their embassy in Moscow. Now, do you see the connection there?
Oh, yes, I do.
Now, I said
there's been a very intimate relation between Moscow and Iran.
Well,
for quite
right,
some time.
They share a common border.
That's right.
And, you know, the affairs of Iran are of great interest to the people in the Russian Republic.
And yet the Russians and the Chinese, who had rather opposed all this stuff, went along with this particular statement.
Well, Sino, I started to say Soviet, but Sino-Russo, well, things have changed a lot since 1969, since, you know, they were calling each other names like, you know, deviationist and imperialist running dogs, the communists, Chinese were calling the Soviets and things like that, or when they were having the Amur River border clashes, you know, back in those days. But, you know, it's interesting enough, just as an aside here, you know, Chinese kids are taught to believe that in the maps, now the original border between the Soviet Union, or I'll call it Soviet Union, or that area of Siberia, was decided in 1689 by the Treaty of Nerchinsk, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the rats that Chinese children are schooled to look at show that China extends pretty far up into what the Russians consider to be their territory.
Well, that doesn't bode well.
Well, if you, there's a really good book called War Between Russia and China by Harrison Salisbury, and I would suggest you read it.
Okay.
It's a very good book, and he was one of our more definitive Soviet experts back during the 60s and 70s. And it's called War Between Russia and China.
Well, I forget who it was that wrote it, but I did. I mentioned this last night, Jim. I saw an article by some noted war game strategist-type person, think tanker, who said that we will bomb Iran in the next 6 to 9 months.
Oh, it's going to be less than that.
Well, I don't know. I don't think so. I think that window is probably almost spot on, Jim, if for no other reason.
It'll be less than that. I said a couple of weeks ago. We're talking about months. We're talking about weeks.
Well, let's see. We're in almost, okay, we're in, call it April, 10 minus 4, 6 months. 6 months is October, and that is just before the November elections, and it makes perfect sense.
Oh, it'll be done between that, long before the November election. It'll be done in the summer or early spring.
But can they, I mean, no, if they do it that early on, Jim, can they get the political hay out of it that they expect to get?
Well, I mean, Bob, we're not talking about normal people. We're not talking about rational people. We're talking about someone who has stated publicly that ours is a doctrine of preemption. And if you subscribe to the doctrine of preemption, you're going to hit when people expect you to hit the least.
Well,
does that not make sense?
No, it does make sense. But we know now from Karl Rove that the war resolution was specifically timed in the Congress as it was because of the elections. They do everything with some election cycle in mind. That's why.
Well,
I mean,
it could be, but you know, maybe this time they're going to generate some type of casus fideris that will necessitate them, getting away from that schedule. I just believe it could happen any day. I really do.
Well,
these people, I mean, now that their sins have begun to find them out, and people are beginning to realize exactly what's been going on, and they're going to have to do this on a lightning blitzkrieg type basis. And they're going to do it with an aerial bombardment of that country.
Yeah, well, that was the other thing that was said, Jim. It will be aerial in nature. There's not going to be any troops on the ground. We're going to go in and go after their uranium enrichment facilities.
And what's going to happen, I can guarantee you, is this is going to be the thing that breaks the camel's straw, that breaks the camel's back, and I'm afraid there goes the nuclear neighborhood.
Well, and you know you're not being some nervous Nelly in saying
either,
because the fact of the matter is this is not Osirak in Iraq that Israel attacked in 1986. It was
right.
All in one place. The Iranians are no dummy, and they've got their entire nuclear infrastructure scattered all over that very, very large country.
And it can't be detected from spy satellites.
And
so they tried to do that. I mean, they...
it's bunkered up.
Oh, yeah.
So that means...
Way bunkered up under the sand.
So that means bunker buster bombs?
Well, it means a lot of things.
And I don't think we're talking about the Moab either. I think, yeah, because I forget how long ago it was, but, you know, we've developed a nuclear bunker buster.
Has that, Bob.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. We've got it. It's there for us to use if we decide to. And this is just the kind of moment where, you know, George Bush is being compared by the people who still are trying to push him. He is being compared, Jim, with Harry Truman.
Well,
Harry Truman,
I don't mean to interrupt you.
No,
but
please.
I mean,
that's all right.
But Harry Truman had a lot, hell of a lot more sense than George Bush ever thought about having. Harry Truman was placed in a real bad position as number one. He inherited this nuclear project that it cost the American taxpayer, we're talking about $1940, $2 billion. Roosevelt hadn't even told him a thing about it. He didn't know exactly what was going on. And, you know, even though the scientists did sign the accord asking him not to use it because it would let this neat genie out of the bottle, he was placed in a bad position, and at least he had guts enough to say the buck stops here.
Yeah.
But George Bush is the kind of person, that would not think twice about using a tactical nuclear weapon.
No, and that's what I'm getting at with these comparisons with Harry Truman, Jim. He believes his own press. And so when people come to him and say, oh, Mr. President, you're just like Harry Truman, you know, the first thing that enters that evil little mind is, does that mean I get to use the bomb?
Well, yeah, and he's not going to be able to even use the think processes that probably went through Truman's and Jimmy Burns' mind when they elected to use the weapon against Hiroshima and Nagasaki. I mean, we're talking about the saving of at least a million American casualties rather than to invade the Japanese home islands back during the end of the war because, you know, they were pretty much adamant about not surrendering. And, you know, I can't judge Truman too harshly for that. I don't like the idea of what happened in those cities. But
I don't know that Truman fully understood.
$2 billion had been spent, and you had that General Groves who was behind it. But you even had Szilard, and you had Oppenheimer and all the people with the Manhattan Project saying, look, we need to rethink this thing. Well, what I think is this. They should have thought about that when they were developing this weapon. And,
yeah.
You know, of course, it was a matter of use or lose before then. They were saying they're going to have it, we're going to have it. You know, and that's and I don't know. I have an ambivalent feeling about our use of nuclear weapons at the end of World War II. I'll just leave it at that, okay?
Well, yeah, that's fair.
I mean, sometimes I think it's right, sometimes I think it's wrong. When I see films like Hiroshima Mon Amour by René, and when I see the pictures of the people, and I mean, the firestorms in Tokyo were worse than what happened in those cities. Good God. But I mean, the fact that, you know, it started basically the nuclear age and let that genie out of the bottle, that was something else. But
and I don't think that Harry Truman fully understood what he was letting out of the bottle.
Well, he basically was the kind of man who didn't take any crap from anybody, and he had decided, well, you know, I have advisors who told me we need to do this. We can't use $2 billion worth and not get something for our money. And it was something that was almost, by the time it got to his desk, Bob, it was overtaken by events, if you know what I mean.
Sure, I do. I do understand.
But the use of tactical nuclear weapons, getting back to Iran, now, that's going to escalate, because when you use a tactical nuclear weapon, you have crossed a threshold.
Well, absolutely, Jim, and the thing that is worth bearing in mind...
And you can't go back through that door once you've crossed
through. No, and we went through that, you know, you're very right, we went through that door in 1945, and there is still a whole bunch of the world that is still mad at us about that. And we'll use that opportunity, you know.
Oh yeah.
You know, we were the first ones to use it. We're the only ones who have ever used it, and we're going to become the second one ever to use it as well.
And coupled with that history, now we are presenting as a part of national policy the doctrine of preemption.
Yeah. And at that point, you know, the rest of the world can't really gang up on us now. But if we go nuclear on Iran, then it's conceivable, very much so, that the rest of the world could finally determine that George Bush had created in the United States a rogue state, and suddenly we get the doctrine of preemption used on us, and it's going to be a bitter pill.
It is, and this is one thing I went to mention last night when I was talking about the European Union. A lot of these people in those countries feel that we are the rogue state.
And we are right now.
And you will find that those countries who are still with us over there in Iraq, their leaders are not being reelected, you know?
Yeah, well, look,
and
I mean...
They're finding it politically expedient to distance themselves from us.
Well, did you notice, Jim, that in the process of, you know, it was one of the reasons for getting rid of Saddam was, you know, we need, you know, it's the adopted stated policy of the United States to have regime change in Iraq. Well, now George Bush, and you remember the election foo-fra and the purple fingers and all of that foolishness.
Oh, yeah.
And they elected Ibrahim al-Jafari,
yeah.
Prime Minister. Mm-hmm. George Bush has now told Ibrahim al-Jafari not to hope to be Prime Minister much longer. That he is not allowed by the United States to be prime minister.
And why would you say that is?
Well, because somebody always has to be the goat. This is George Bush's screw-up. This is, you know, this is what Colin Powell called the pottery barn rule. He broke it. He has to fix it. But never in his entire miserable, sorry life has George Bush ever taken responsibility for anything that he has done, and he is not about to take responsibility for Iraq either. And so now he's found himself a goat in the form of Al Jafari, and we're telling Iraq that, well, you know, we got to have regime change again.
Well, you know, I don't see how that's going to work, because we're the ones who went in there, and we're the ones who broke, you know, we're the ones who went in the pottery shop and broke everything up. Not Al Jafari.
I understand
he's
that.
He's just our stooge.
And this is what you do with a stooge. You know, I wish these people...
I don't think people are going to buy that, Bob.
Well, you know, the Iraqi people aren't buying any of it, Jim. I mean,
I'm talking about the world opinion. I mean, they can see through us. I mean, it's so transparent.
Well,
and they're
it
not
is.
Going to be, and you know, we're not going to be able to blame that on somebody else. This one's going to roost right. This is our albatross right here. It's right
this
around
is,
our shoulder.
This is our Syracuse.
Well, this is something that we're not going to be able to blame on any Iraqi. And I'll guarantee you one thing, that fool is going to have us at war with Iran and Russia and other countries within the year.
You know, I don't mean any ill. I love this country. We all understand that. But I hope someone in the Russian embassy has made it clear to Condoleezza Rice that if we nuke Iran, we have a terrible, terrible, terrible problem on our hands.
Well, I mean, you know, it's just like the reverse of what President Kennedy relayed to Mr. Khrushchev back during the 1962 Cuban Missile Crisis. I mean, the Russians are going to take they're going to consider an attack upon Iran as an attack upon the RFSSR, the Russian Republic.
And, you know, that's similar to the whole diplomatic chain of events that led up to World War One too.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You know, it's just, you know, this, you have a whole room full of mousetraps and ping pong balls, and then you throw one ping pong ball in there, you're going to get a chain reaction.
Yeah,
it's not going to produce something you want.
Two guys in a rowboat on a sea of gasoline lighting matches.
It's going to be, you know, and things are going to be, again, OBE, overtaken by events. And this is when events really man loses control of his own destiny. This is what's going to happen when it's pushed too far.
I don't know if the American people understand how frightening the possibilities are. Jim, thank you so much.
Well, and there's one other thing I want you to leave you with, too, if you don't mind.
Sure.
The Russians are not stupid people in the defense of their homeland, okay?
Yeah.
Now, you know, they have a system of defense there which could release almost 4,000 missiles, and no human hand has to do it.
No. No, the thing they talked about it that was mentioned in Dr. Strangelove.
Well, that is, in fact, a reality.
Yeah. That's a little frightening.
I mean, that's even if all their command bunkers are taken out and all there's nobody there, then, you know, a certain chain of events begins to unwind automatically, and there goes the neighborhood. And on that cheery note, I'm going to bid y'all good night.
Yeah, I think so. Jim, thanks so much.
Glad to see y'all make everybody feel better.
I'm working on the fan tods now.
Okay, Mark Twain, good night.
Take care. There's plenty of reason to be terrified. And, it, you know, like I said, my favorite film is Dr. Strangelove. It's not funny anymore.
The fools. The mad fools.
This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Look, Mommy. There's snow playing up in the sky.
frightened ones. Did you hear the falling bombs? Did you ever wonder why we had to run for shelter when the promise of a brave new world unfurled beneath the clear blue sky?
Back door, everything is all right.
This week on Fourth Estate Radio, historian, author, and lefty stir, Humphrey McQueen.
You take those Coca-Cola plants in Guatemala. Time and time again, someone's tried to organize a little union. They either come out and they shoot them, they abduct their kids, they rape their daughters. There's a whole range of levels on which they do this. Now, you'd think when this had happened the first time, you'd think, well, the bloke didn't know any better. But
the benefit of the doubt first time.
Then 5 years later, someone else does it.
Yeah.
You think, has he forgotten that the kind of thing that's going to happen to him? Why do they do that? That seems to me to be more remarkable than the fact that you're pointing to the fact that most of the American working class at the moment are pretty quiescent.
Join us Saturday night, 10 p.m. Eastern, for Fourth Estate Radio on the Head On Radio Network. Head On Radio News, I'm John Fox. Add one more to George Bush's list of excuses for his failed Iraq occupation. Now, it's Saddam's fault. Bush said, quote, "The enemies of a free Iraq are employing the same tactics Saddam used, killing and terrorizing the Iraqi people in an effort to foment sectarian division," unquote. Democrat Senator Reid points out, quote, "The president can give all the speeches he wants, but nothing will change the fact that his Iraq policy is wrong," unquote. And he continues, quote, "2 weeks ago, he told the American people that Iraqis would control their country by the end of the year. But last week, he told us our troops would be there till at least 2009, unquote. Influence peddler Jack Abramoff gets nearly 6 years in prison. Abramoff, the disgraced lobbyist at the heart of a Washington influence peddling scandal that has ripped top Republicans, was sentenced to nearly 6 years in prison on Wednesday for fraud in the purchase of a Florida casino cruise line. Representative George Miller said, quote, "Jack Abramoff broke the law, and now he is going to pay the price for it." But complete justice will not be served until all of Abramoff's activities and connections are exposed and all of his partners in crime are punished, unquote. Unbeknownst to the rest of us, Christianity is under attack, or so says Rick Scarborough. In a 2-day conference in Washington, titled War on Christians and the Values Voters in 2006, with upstanding fraudsters like Tom DeLay in the list of speakers, DeLay said, quote, "We are, after all, a society that abides abortion on demand, that has killed millions of innocent children, that degrades the institution of marriage and often treats Christianity like some second-rate superstition. Seen from this perspective, of course, there is a war on Christianity," unquote. The Associated Press reports the Florida Attorney General's office has issued investigative subpoenas to the three companies certified to sell voting machines in Florida. Attorney General Charlie Crist is reviewing a dispute between the firms and Leon County's election supervisor. Diebold Election Systems, Election Systems and Software, and Sequoia Voting Systems have refused to sell equipment to let disabled voters cast ballots without help in Leon County. Election Supervisor Ian Sancho has been outspoken about his concern that the devices can be easily manipulated to change race outcomes. The company's refusal has left Leon County, the home of the state capital, in violation of the federal Help America Vote Act. An American Muslim was sentenced Wednesday to 30 years in prison for joining al-Qaeda and plotting to assassinate George Bush. Ahmed Omar Abu Ali, a 25-year-old U.S. citizen who was born to a Jordanian father and raised in Falls Church, Virginia, faced a mandatory minimum of 20 years in prison and a maximum of life behind bars. This is news on the Horn.
The major record labels say that downloading music from the internet is stealing, stealing, stealing. But according to these people, making a mixtape for your friend is stealing too. So is making a tape of a radio show.
Home radio. We play the songs that sound more like everyone else than anyone else.
When a rock band plays an AC/DC cover at a bar that doesn't pay ASCAP, that's stealing. Or have you ever sung happy birthday to your friend at a restaurant?
Warning!
Happy birthday is copyrighted. So if you're singing in a public place, you'd better be paying royalties or you'll be
stealing music.
Does all this stuff about stealing music sound absurd? Would you rather have a world where our music culture wasn't the intellectual property of five corporations? Then stop giving them your money and make sure your friends and family don't either. Better yet, try burning them a CD. If we pull the plug on major labels, music gets better. Find out more about what you can do. Check out downhillbattle.org.
The UN Security Council has unanimously called on Iran to suspend uranium enrichment activities within 30 days and cooperate with the International Atomic Energy Agency, the UN's nuclear watchdog. The vote came after five permanent members of the council reached an agreement on the draft document, which was written by the British and French. Iran remains defiant. The government released a statement through its embassy in Moscow on Tuesday warning that Security Council intervention would, quote, escalate tensions, entailing negative consequences that would be of benefit to no party, unquote. In Baghdad, gunmen dressed like Iraqi police commandos burst into a Baghdad trading company Wednesday, killing five innocent male and three innocent female employees. Six guards were also wounded at the Iqbar Trading Company in western Baghdad's upscale Mansour Market. The slayings were the last in a string of attacks and abductions this week in the Iraq capital as Sunni-Shiite sectarian tensions boil over and crime spreads, leaving business owners and employees on the edge. The Bush administration continues to deny that there is civil war. Federal officials are investigating a third close call in less than a week involving planes at O'Hare International Airport. On March 21st, two planes were mistakenly instructed to take off at the same time on crisscrossing runways. 2 days later, a plane was sent to taxi across the runway where another plane had already started its takeoff roll. The National Transportation Safety Board, which typically responds to fatal accidents, considered both significant enough to dispatch investigators to O'Hare. The latest incident involved two commercial planes preparing to take off on crisscrossing runways on Sunday. An Airbus A320 plane had been cleared for takeoff but was told to abort 4 seconds later because another plane had been readying for takeoff on an intersecting runway. The Federal Aviation Administration said FAA officials said Tuesday they were trying to determine whether the two planes got closer than allowed by federal rules. This is News on the Horn, the Head On Radio Network.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
All righty then. Welcome back. 7.5 minutes past the hour. By the time you hear me say that, it'll probably be 8 minutes past the hour. All right, we have beaten the weird little religion industry freaks pretty much to death, I think. Let's see. Abramoff gets 6 years for fraud. You know that. And, of course, the thing that disturbed me about that was usually after you've sentenced a guy and he's got a plea deal, he has no more incentive to tell the truth. Now, he is still awaiting sentencing on his serious high crimes and misdemeanors, the utter corruption of the federal government. And I don't know if that sentencing's going to take place before he's had a chance to rat out everyone else or not. If it does, we will know that the fix was in, right? Right. But this is something I mentioned in a conversation with Jim earlier. The George Bush administration failed to enter into negotiations with Iran on its nuclear program in May 2003 because neoconservatives who advocated destabilization and regime change were able to block any serious diplomatic engagement with Tehran, according to former administration officials. The same neocon veto power also prevented the administration from adopting any official policy statement on Iran. Lawrence Wilkerson, then Chief of Staff to Secretary of State Colin Powell, said the failure to adopt a formal Iran policy in 2002-03 was the result of obstruction by a secret cabal of neoconservatives in the administration led by Vice President Dick Cheney. The secret cabal got what it wanted, no negotiations with Tehran.
Now, does this make it abundantly clear? I should hope it does. Abundantly clear that what we're dealing with here is yet another fraud. This is the evil of the people who are in power. This is the evil of the Bush administration. They're running around wringing their hands now, trying to once again gin up terror and make us, and you know what the next step is. This is out of the same playbook that they did with Iraq. The next thing we'll hear is that they have that they have a weapons of mass destruction program, and they can get in a little rubber raft and start rowing and put a nuclear bomb in Charleston, South Carolina in 45 minutes, or maybe London. I mean, you remember when all that garbage went down, right? Sure. This is that. They had a chance to engage Tehran in 2003 when they were getting ready to get, when they were, you know, already in the process of slaughtering Iraq and avert this entire problem. But they didn't want to avert the problem. They don't like that. Averting the problem is not their gig. Creating the problem is their gig. If you avert the problem, you don't get to have a neat, keen, groovy war that is hugely, hugely successful for people like Halliburton. Right? Of course. This has nothing to do with war or peace or justice or mercy or preemption. This has to do with the greatest amount of profit possible. That is why we should be terrified. Not terrified of Iran, but terrified of the megalomaniacal killers in Washington, D.C. Because they mean no good to anyone
of us. Have you ever seen a commie drink a glass of water? Vodka. That's what they drink, isn't it? Never water. On no account will a commie ever drink water, and not without good reason.
That's where we are. General Jack D. Ripper at Burpelson Air Force Base is in charge of the largest, most dangerous arsenal in the history of the world. George W. Bush is Jack D. Ripper.
Well, he went a little funny in the head. You know, just a little funny. And he went and did a silly thing.
And the silly thing is to plot war with Iran. Now, I said, of course, I don't guess there's any way of finding this out because the recording doesn't exist anymore. But I said within months of the beginning of this war, when everyone was jumping up and down and hollering, USA, USA, kill the Dixie Chicks. I said that we lost the war in Iraq when we began it. That it was over before it started. Because you cannot start this kind of war and expect to have anything approaching victory because it is born in evil. And born in evil it was, and born in evil the next one will be. And, you know, what? Are we going to hear it from our Democratic leadership again? Well, you know, I will criticize the war up until such time as it begins, but after the war begins, it is necessary for us all to come together and support the president. Yeah, that sounds well and good, but what it is crazy talk. Pure and simple crazy talk. Pathologically insane talk. I will not support the president in his war efforts. I did not support him before he started this war against Iraq, and I will not support him before he starts a war with Iran, and I will not support him after he starts a war with Iran, because you know what? My mother, God rest her soul, did a pretty doggone good job giving me a strong moral foundation, and I have a profound understanding of the difference between right and wrong. And just because the president starts the war doesn't make what was wrong before he did it right after it. Wrong is wrong, evil is evil, and when you are doing evil and you realize it's evil, you stop doing evil. You don't support more evil somewhere else. Oh, there were some marches in the street over Iraq and so forth. But you know what? The marches we need to have over Iran, we have not even begun to contemplate. If we let this government start war with Iran, we are dead. What Jim said, there goes the nuclear neighborhood. Let's go to the phones. Richard is with us. Hey, Richard, you're head on. Thanks for calling the program.
Whoop, hi. Lost you there for a moment.
Oh, sorry about that.
Okay. I can't get you guys live on my computer, so I don't know what you've been talking about.
I'm terribly sorry. Is it a technical issue with White Rose? Or?
It's probably a technical issue with my computer. My Windows installation is corrupted.
If you can download Winamp, it plays very well on Winamp.
Ah, okay.
And it plays very well on iTunes too. And if you've got computer issues and you've still got broadband, you can always go to the dial-up stream, and that makes things very, very easy because it's still a high quality. It's still a high quality stream.
Oh, okay, let me get that down. You said Winamp.
Yeah, just download Winamp. Okay. If you get the Winamp Lite, you don't get all the bells and whistles and irritating things that sometimes come with it.
Yeah, right. I understand. The other one. What was that? The Apple thing.
iTunes.
Yeah, I'm very leery of putting any Apple software on.
Then I would go with Winamp if I were you.
Yeah. Okay. Two issues on my mind tonight.
Sure.
I said I would call you back last time.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
And we're 3 hours behind you.
Right.
So it seems like I'm always doing something else at the time you're on. But I'm
in the middle of your afternoon.
Yeah. Well, it's a little after 6 here.
Right.
And I usually catch you on the replay off White Rose.
Yeah, or through Radio Power, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So you're delayed to me. Anyway, my two issues are fake Democrats.
Yes.
I know that's a subject dear to your heart.
No, it is.
And the other one is health care.
Well, I think the two kind of dovetail together, don't they, Richard?
Well, to some extent.
I
came here to California in 1971, and as I mentioned last time, I think I've never seen such political corruption in my whole life. And I'm from New York.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we know we're in trouble when the corrupt politicians don't bother to hide it. In other words, when they're so arrogant and self-assured.
Yeah, they've just got the bit in their teeth and they don't feel like they've got to anymore.
That's right. And that's what I started observing. Ironically, here the machine was the Democratic Party. And right now we have all this Republican corruption in Washington, and it's very visible. And here it was the reverse, and I got to thinking, well, no matter who's in power, you got to have some opposition to keep these guys in line.
Well, I think you're right, but I think we can do that from the progressive point of view as well.
I would like to see that, you know. But the situation here, I mean, we've got, if I remember right, both of our senators voted for the Patriot Act renewal.
Oh, yes. Well,
so,
you know,
these are Democrats.
Well, what? Russ Feingold was the only senator that didn't vote for it.
That's very scary.
In its initial manifestation.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, we had a slightly larger handful that voted against it this time. But it was still a safe vote to make this time through because everyone knew it was going to pass.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm waiting for the real critical votes. Over in the House of Representatives, the Budget Reconciliation Bill and CAFTA come to mind.
Uh-huh.
Those were votes that were literally one vote different. you know, 216 to 214, it would have been a tie if someone had voted differently. That's where you see the rubber really meet the road.
Here, we have Dianne Feinstein is our senator.
Right.
And we have Barbara Boxer. And Feinstein, to me, is, you know, is the ultimate fake Democrat.
Well, yeah, she's Joe Biden in pumps a lot of the time.
Yeah, and I've been watching, you know, her career. There's a slogan that goes around on the left here, which is the Dianne Feinstein backstab, which is that you think she's on your side and you support her, and then all of a sudden she's...
Whoops, there she goes again, yeah.
Yeah. And where I've been is continuously... Every time there's an election, it's like I have to hold my nose and vote for the lesser of two evils.
Oh, I believe me, I understand. Some of that applies, and I will get under the skin of a lot of my West Virginia friends for saying this. Some of that stuff applies with Robert Byrd.
Oh, definitely.
You know, Robert Byrd is on our side. Oh, he's a man of the people. Look, he plays a fiddle, you know. And bless his heart, my condolences go out to him. He lost his wife this weekend. You know, they were married for... heavenly days, you know, something on the order of 40 years, you know, that's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the things he's done in the last couple of years have really, really annoyed me and really, really disturbed me about where he really is. He did not have to vote in favor of the bankruptcy law, Richard.
Oh, yeah.
But he did.
But he did.
He did not have to vote in favor of the so-called class action reform. But he did.
That's one I don't know about. How's that go?
Well, the class action reform was rammed through the Congress, and it is in fact law now. It takes the power of the state courts away to hear class actions. You know, so that if a bunch of Californians get poisoned by what, C8 or perchlorate, mm-hmm. or something like that, it used to be that you could certify your class before a state judge of competent jurisdiction. And go from there. You can't now. That has been taken away. It all goes to the federal courts. And the federal court system, Richard, is slanted in such a way that, well, you know, in many instances, it's where plaintiffs' claims go to die.
Mm-hmm.
There's no getting around it. It was a closing of the courthouse doors to ordinary wounded, injured, poisoned, hurt Americans. And Byrd voted for it.
Yeah.
And
I've sometimes had the crazy fantasy of voting for a Republican just to get these people out, because the net result is that, let's say, when we have a Feinstein running for an office, that robs us of the opportunity to put in a progressive.
Well, but I think the real failing of that, Richard, it's not something that happens in the general election. And I hope progressives can figure this out somewhere down the road, God willing, the sooner the better. Where our fight lies is not in the general election. Our fight lies in the primary.
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah.
You know, we've got a field, you know, if you live in Delaware and you don't like Joe Biden, somebody has to run against him in the primary.
Right.
And even if you're going to go with that notion that maybe, you know, if you get the Republican, you can get rid of him in 6 years, especially where you're talking about the Senate. You know, the idea of having any Republican in office in the Senate of the United States for 6 years is horrifying to me. 2 years is too long with a Republican in the House of Representatives. But, you know, 6 years you can do real damage. So the important thing becomes getting shed, you know, fielding viable candidates in a primary system. And, you know, and hopefully winning there, because mm-hmm. it's a much shorter time frame. The money issue isn't nearly what it is in a general circumstance. And again, I tend to believe it has to happen through the party as it exists. I'm not talking about whether you like the DLC or anything. I mean, you're not going to succeed by running a third party candidate in the general election. That's just sort of a feel-good protest vote, and that serves no purpose.
We actually had a Green win a state office.
Well, that's all for that.
Yeah.
You know, I try to tell people who believe in the green platform and such, you know, I mentioned this last night. I don't understand why there's a green party, because everything that the green party stands for should be a part of the Democratic Party.
Oh, absolutely.
But if, you know, if you want to build this so-called third party, you build it by running people for alderman and county commission and, you know, Board of Public Works and the county surveyor or state house representative or state senator. That's where a third party gets built. It doesn't get built by trying to run a presidential candidate and just splitting off votes from because the presidential selection system constitutionally is geared against anything but a two-party system.
Right.
So it just stands to reason that any third-party presidential vote is a vote for whoever is a vote against whoever is probably politically nearest. What I'm getting at, votes for Ross Perot hurt George H.W. Bush more than they hurt Bill Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
Votes for Ralph Nader hurt Al Gore more than they hurt George W. Bush.
Right.
So, you know, that's just political poison. And the thing that everybody who's behind the third party movement does have to understand is that as soon as that third party is viable, it will cease being a third party and it will be the second party, and the second party will have died. This country is going to have, for the foreseeable and frankly unforeseeable future, a two-party system.
Yeah, I can't see any reason to differ with that.
So, you know, I think it just becomes important that the Democrats get back to their real base. And the real base of the Democratic Party is working people's wallet issues, food on the table, good job, benefits, viable pension and retirement, a healthy social safety net, being able to go to the doctor when you need to go to the doctor. Schools in which our children can have something more than can become something more than an educated surf class. And we don't need to waste our time playing into these wedge issues that the Republicans are so good at making us run on.
And they really are.
Oh, they're masters at it, you know, and they pick our candidates for us. I'm convinced, Richard, that John Kerry was the guy they wanted to run against in 2004.
You know, I was talking with my son a couple of days ago, and it's the way that, what's his name from Vermont?
Howard Dean?
Yeah, the way that Howard Dean just suddenly turned into Kerry in the... you know, for the nomination was mind-boggling.
Well, it was, and that was because that was when the money started talking. You know, Howard Dean had raised a horse-gagging load of money, but, you know, the Republican machine largely demonized him and created the Kerry juggernaut.
Mm-hmm. Well, I remember it's like he said something like hee-haw, and the whole press was just ran away with that.
Yeah, and that was manufactured. There was nothing real about that. As somebody who fools around with sound a little bit, and our good friend John Fox down in Australia, who is a professional live sound engineer,
mm-hmm.
can tell you what the mainstream media ran that made Howard Dean sound like a raving lunatic was a feed through the board. If you heard him do that scream in that room and you were at the back of the room, you didn't even hear him do it.
Wow.
Because the PA system was overwhelmed by people, you know, crowd noise.
Mm.
But this was a feed straight through the board, and so it lit up all the little LED lights, and it made him sound like a screaming maniac. And it was done for a reason. It was done deliberately, and it was a classic case of Rovian political machination.
Who do you think did it?
Well, I think the media played a big part in it because it gave them a story. How many times did you see it?
A zillion times.
Right, and compare that with Monica at the rope line. How many times did you see him hug Bill Clinton hug Monica at the rope line?
I think we need Monica right now.
Oh Lord. Well, you know, if that's what gets you a viable economy, yeah, I want a whole.
Maybe it would humanize that guy. I don't know.
Nah,
desperately.
Now you're talking crazy talk. There's no humanizing George W. Bush. He's from planet Zarvon, and we all know it. I mean, he's like something out of one of the Men in Black movies.
But we got him.
Oh, we're so stuck with him. You know.
Yeah.
Then again, he's out there on an island in Cancun. You know, dadgummit, you know, where's hurricane season when you need it? Oh, they're going to come and take me away. Richard, good to talk to you. I hope we'll hear from you again. And, yeah, get Winamp. It's a free download. If you go to cnet.com, it'll be easy enough. But if you just Google around for it, you'll get it. The light version is really easy. And click on the dial-up, and I think you won't have any problem getting the show whatsoever.
Okay.
All right, take care, Richard.
Thanks.
Bye now. And let's see. Let's roll right through. Gerard's been waiting. Hey, Gerard, you're head on. How you doing?
Hey, Bob. I'm doing good.
Good.
I had to check in for prayer meeting night, you know.
Yeah.
I just wanted to make a couple comments, just some of the things, pick up on a couple of things you had talked about earlier. I think I mentioned to you before, I was raised non-Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
So the things that I see happening in our country, especially, I was telling Agnes, I was going to talk about Martin Luther King and Rush Limbaugh, and I can't think of any more two disparate people.
Oh, Lord. I didn't even know you could say those names in the same sentence and get away with it.
Yeah, but he, you know, the thing about it is that, you know, I think it's very important, as you've mentioned many times, is to not lose your historical memory. And I'm old enough so I can remember Martin Luther King and seeing the reports on the television about the marches. And, of course, of his assassination. Something, I think the difference comes, I think, and I don't claim to be, you know, the height of morality by any means. But when you see something, you know, I think God gave us reason and gave us eyes for a reason. You know, I think he created us that way for a reason.
Yes.
I mean, Jesus said, you know, by their fruit ye shall know them.
Yes.
And, you know, when you see something like bombers over Baghdad and hear generals talking about shock and awe, and you get that sinking feeling in the pit of your stomach, that's an experience of seeing knowing someone by the fruit that they bear.
Well, exactly.
You know, and, you know, when you see, to me, you look at the march on Selma, the march to Selma. Watching a documentary about that just the other night, and that, to me, is a righteous act. And on this planet anymore, which is something I think Martin Luther King understood and his mentor before him, Gandhi, understood, that on this planet we can no longer afford this kind of horrific wars that we have.
Well, and Einstein even spoke to that.
Yeah.
That classic quote from Albert Einstein where he said, "I do not know what kind of weapons they will use to fight the next world war, but I know what kind of weapons they will use to fight the world war after that, sticks and stones."
Yeah.
You know, that should be plastered on some monument in Washington, D.C., and every other world capital.
Absolutely. You know, and that to me is, you know, this whole list of people that you went down about who just had the meeting or, you know, saying how persecuted they are. You know, those people, you look at what are they producing? You know, what is in this society, what actually are they producing?
They generate no human good within the economic structure of the United States whatsoever. Nothing.
Well,
none.
Well, even just in relation, you know, societal relationship, you know, do they produce the love and compassion that Christ talked about?
No, not that either.
I don't think so. I don't see it, you know. With the eyes God gave me, I don't see it.
No, everything is hate. You know, they can't talk about the love of Christ. They have to talk about aborted babies. That tells me what their agenda is.
Right, exactly.
You know, I don't know, you know, I've had some fundamentalists take issue with me from time to time over my conception of Christ as a radical. But if you understand your ancient history you know what a brutal world he lived in.
Right.
I mean, even civilized Rome, which ruled Palestine at the time, civilized Rome was a brutal place. I mean, you spent your holiday afternoons going to the Circus Maximus watching wild animals eat people.
Right.
Or watching two people fight, you know, fight to the death in the gladiatorial contests.
Mm-hmm.
This is a brutal, brutal world in which Christ arises. And when he says, Gerard, we don't get it because we've got 2,000 years of so-called Christianity behind us that make this palatable and acceptable. We don't comprehend what a radical act it was for him to stand up and say, love thy neighbor as thyself. Because it was not part of the social fabric of either ancient Palestine, ancient Judea, ancient Egypt, ancient Rome, ancient Greece. It wasn't a part of it. I mean, we mentioned the other night about the Spartan society. Sparta was ruled by a group of old men. You know, we get the word geriatric from the Greek word. It was called a gerousia.
Right.
And the old men ruled Sparta, and Sparta was propped up by a slave class whose life literally was hell on earth. They were called helots, H-E-L-O-T-S. And the young people of Sparta were encouraged to go through the helots villages from time to time and just beat the snot out of them in order to keep them subjected. This is the world into which Jesus Christ comes and says, I tell you that the two greatest commandments are love thy God and love thy neighbor as thyself. That was the kind of radical stuff that could turn a civilization on its ear. And as it turns out, 2,000 years later, it can get you killed again.
Yeah. And the world is just as a brutal place now, if not more so, than it was then.
Right. Well, we've got that, you know, we've got the love thy neighbor as thyself thing going for us, but we don't live it. Because if you live in a nation that that preaches and practices that concept, you do not start a war with Iraq. It is physically, morally, psychologically, philosophically impossible to have the Iraq war in a nation that actually believes the teachings of Yeshua.
Right. Totally agree with you. And, you know, the other thing I was mentioning, I'm stuttering.
No, that's quite all right. Don't worry about it.
Like you were mentioning earlier, you know, when Christ goes into the temple and picks up a whip and starts chasing people out with it, saying, this is a house of prayer and you've made it a den of thieves, you know, that to me, when I juxtapose that over Pat Robertson,
yeah,
or Rod Parsley. That's exactly what they're doing. They're making something spiritual a den of thieves.
Yeah, and they have turned the place where Holy Communion would take place into an abattoir.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I'm convinced that there's nothing Christian about them. You know, the other stuff I mentioned at the top of the program, Gerard, that Jerry Falwell has a new special friend. Did you run across that one?
Oh, no, I haven't seen it.
Yeah, Jerry Falwell has a new special friend, and his name is Senator John McCain.
Oh, jeez.
So, you know, John McCain has never been particularly known for going out and hustling the weirdo religious right. But now, you know, it's 2006, he's getting the machine rolling, and it's time to go and kiss the ring. And he is delivering the commencement address at Jerry Falwell University. You know, and all of this stuff just dovetails together and drives me absolutely crazy. Because, among other things, most people don't realize that Jerry Falwell University was bailed out by the Reverend Moon.
Yeah, yeah, who owns the Washington Post.
And UPI and has little ceremonies in chambers outside of Congress where they crown Reverend Moon and call him King of the Universe.
Yeah.
And most people don't even know it. You know, at the best, and that's the thing, there's a segment of our side of this fight, Gerard, that says that, well, you know, I mean, yeah, Jerry Falwell, he's crazy. Nobody pays attention to him.
Oh, a lot of people do.
Sure, and James Dobson, I don't know who rates him. I mean, most of it's paid programming, but James Dobson claims to have more radio listeners than any other human being broadcasting on the North American continent.
Eighth. God save us.
That should and for the liberals who say, well, you know, those are just crazy people. You know what? Those crazy people that he's talking to go out and do his bidding. When he says go and vote Republican, or he uses some sort of code to protect his sorry 501c3 designation, go and vote family values.
Yeah. And, you know, that's the thing that gets me. We were talking the other night about this immigration issue. And, you know, sometimes you just look at personalities in the media. I look at Geraldo Rivera. I can remember when Geraldo Rivera was covering Cesar Chavez in Southern California, in Arizona, in Texas. And now he works for Fox.
Yeah. And, you know, Cesar Chavez was one of the greatest men of the 20th century in my book. Because he stood up for people that absolutely had no one to stand up for them. And that takes a lot of courage. That's, you know, in my book, that's living the Christ-like life.
Yeah. And I just, you know, I said I was going to get to Rush Limbaugh. This whole thing that, and this is, I guess, a little old news, but this thing about him and the people from the peace activists that were kidnapped in Iraq and the one Tom Fox that was killed. And he goes on a show and calls them self-absorbed and, you know, that because the military had to go in and rescue them.
Right.
I know there's a drug issue here, but geez.
Yeah, know? I mean, that's a little too much to even have OxyContin explain it.
You know, I don't claim to know all about this particular peace activist group, but I tend to like, you know, using the eyes God gave me, I tend to see things, you know, on their face unless proved otherwise.
Right.
And, you know, for him to come out and say that is just, to me, beyond the pale.
Oh, and, you know, it went even further. Didn't he also say that they should be returned to their captors?
Yeah. I mean, it's just, there's something, you know, we get all hopped up in the chat room and, you know, and I guess it's a matter of degree, but I just think that that's, for someone in his position who has a microphone, who reaches the people that he does, even as off the wall as he is, that's just beyond the pale.
Well, it is. And the sad thing is, there, and again, this is like James Dobson. There are people who hear that and go, well, yes, of course. And that's the segment of the population you can't reach. But it is important for liberals and progressives, Gerard, to understand that they do in fact exist, and that you cannot combat them by ignoring them. You must openly confront them.
Mm-hmm.
And that takes a whole lot of guts.
Yeah.
And I don't know, but what maybe it's a level of guts that some liberals don't have.
Yeah. Well, it's easier to be comfortable, sit on our butts and not do anything.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. Gerard, thanks so much for calling in. I do appreciate it.
Good talking.
Always good to hear from you on prayer meeting night.
All right.
Take care. Bye now. Now, let's continue in this same vein as we sort of wind down for the evening, if that's all right. You know, one of my favorite, Limbaugh is Limbaugh. But one of my favorite human beings has got to be Glenn Beck. I'm kidding, of course. This guy is, I mean, I feel better about a big old fat tick on a hound dog's ear than I feel about Glenn Beck.
Careful, Bob, or you'll get
smooth. Now, this goes back to around March 16th, I think. There was a bit of a tempest in a teapot coming out of Peekskill, New York. And a 7-year-old little girl, are you familiar with this? Am I just covering ground? Am I wasting time on this? I don't know. A 7-year-old little girl who is a poet. And she read a poem. Her name is Autumn Ashanti. She read a poem about what it felt like for her to be black. And she read off names like Christopher Columbus and Captain Henry Morgan, the pirate, and, I forget, there was one other, and said that they, you know, they stole your life, they stole your dignity. It was, you know, it was a socially conscious poem and pretty damn good for a seven-year-old. Now, Glenn Beck, of course, is a recent hire of Cable News Network, and whoever that clown was that hired him said he's humorous and non-confrontational when they hired him for CNN Headline News. Now, bear in mind that, as I mentioned earlier in the program, Keith Olbermann's ratings have surpassed both Paula Zahn and Nancy Grace. You know, when was the last time you heard anybody say, hey, did you hear what Paula Zahn said last night? No, because, I mean, you know, she's human Somonex, okay? But so Glenn Beck gets after this child because this child said, even the white people that try to fix up with us, they're still devils. I feel they're devils and they should be gone. We should be away from them and still be in Africa. Okay? This is a seven-year-old child. This is in the same boat. No, it's not in the same boat. But I guess there's a certain level of similarity. When you're handing 8 and 9 year old children Satan's Beatitudes as they leave the Baptist church, you're imposing something on a child that should. I mean, it's almost like child abuse, isn't it? Well, check out Glenn Beck. This is Glenn Beck's response to a 7-year-old little girl. Or not. Here we go. Yeah.
She has told the Westchester Journal News that white people are devils and should be gone. We should be away from those devils and we should still be in Africa. I will gladly send you a ticket. You want to go to Africa? I will personally purchase your airfare. I'll do it. It's run wet one way. You have to sign a contract that you will never return to the United States. Of course, if you go there, remember, I mean, they seem to be having a problem with the bird flu.
Just take a minute and let that just rattle around. Now, first of all, Glenn Beck, you darned idiot. The bird flu problem's in Asia, not Africa. Separate continents. I know. They begin with the same letter, and it's a little tough for a right wing nut like you, but yeah, you know, they begin different places. Secondly, by tacitly making that statement, he wished a deadly disease on a 7-year-old little girl. And bear in mind, Glenn Beck is very proud of what a good, upstanding Christian he is. He touts it all the time. Very proud. Now, they sent our children home with the Satanic Beatitudes. Perhaps it is worthwhile to consider the real ones, the real Beatitudes. This is the stuff in Roman Palestine that gets your ass killed. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are they who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the land. Blessed are they who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be satisfied. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the clean of heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called the children of God. Blessed are they who are persecuted for the sake of righteousness. See, that's the one they love the best, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when they insult you and persecute you and utter every kind of evil against you falsely because of me. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward will be great in heaven. Those are the real Beatitudes. Glenn Beck, on the other hand, fake Christian, lives by a fake set of Beatitudes and a fake set of morals that allows him to get behind a microphone and wish miserable, heartrending death upon seven-year-old little girls whose skin is not the same color as his. That is one of Satan's beatitudes. Let's go to the phones. Ben is with us. Hey, Ben, you're head on.
Hey there. You know what Glenn Beck just did?
No.
he has outed himself as at least a fellow traveler to the American Nazi Party. Because, you know, I grew up in a town here, Elgin, Illinois, where there were just a tremendous number of racists and a lot of Illinois Nazis. All right?
Yeah.
And for the longest time, the only bookstore in town, the Elgin Bookstore, it was, you know, the counter fellow was a Nazi. And he, seeing a Germanic looking blonde haired blue eyed kid come in there, he'd, you know, hand me his literature. And part of the literature was, you know, the vote ticket to give to black people.
Oh yeah, sure.
Yeah, vote tickets where we welcome them to remove their black asses to Africa.
Yes, that would be the mud people, wouldn't it? Isn't that one of the ways they refer?
Well, these use the N word.
No, they're the real good ones.
So Glenn Beck just made himself a Nazi.
Yeah, he is.
Okay.
And
I think that is perfectly fair. If you do the same darn things that the most hideous creatures imaginable do, you're one of them.
It's walking, it's quacking, it is one.
Yeah, he certainly quacked.
You know, and I mean, I first got notice of this story, Ben, this morning, just tuning into CNN for a couple of minutes. And it was just horrifying. And because they used that same clip in this CNN package, knowing full well that they are putting that filth on the air.
Yes.
Not just in terms of the package, but they're going to let that happen every blessed night on headline news.
Yes.
Yes.
Well,
yeah, I know.
Glenn Beck, I call you a Nazi.
Glenn Beck, you are a Nazi. You know, it couldn't be any simpler. I hate him.
I wonder, you know.
I just hate him, Ben.
There are times that I actually, you know, even having recently gone through a major documentary, you know, set of lectures on the American Civil War, and knowing what a complete disaster that was, I wish for another. I'm just really sorry that we didn't kill every single slaveholder after that war.
Well,
because they have polluted every bit of our culture since then.
Oh, sure. The Klan was formed probably not 40 miles from where I grew up, Ben.
Yeah, what was the name of the general?
Bedford Forrest.
Bedford Forrest, who by the way was responsible for the massacre at Fort Pillow, where all of the black soldiers who were garrisoning that fort, even when they came down on their knees and begged to be allowed to surrender, were killed.
Put them to the sword.
Just a, you know, he bragged that the river was red with blood for 250 yards from Fort Pillow, and he became the first Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan.
Yeah, and you know, this little girl. I don't begrudge African Americans for having some level of bitterness.
She's homeschooled too.
No, this child's homeschooled. She's a daggum little genius. And you know, the poem that got under Glenn Beck's skin was called "White Nationalism Put You in Bondage."
Well, it does.
It did.
Yeah.
And how ironic that he would take umbrage at being considered in the class of nationalists when, after all, well, you know, if the shoe fits.
Well, you know, I can't imagine that a white person who wasn't in essence a Nazi a national socialist, would have objected to that poem. I understood where it came from. You understood where it came from. Every single one of our listeners to this show, with the exception of one I won't name, probably understands where that came from. And the only people who would object, it's like a Rorschach test.
That's exactly.
If you objected to this, it's probably because you were the target of it.
Yeah, that's it is. God, I love the way you figure things out, Ben. It's a Rorschach test for Republicans.
It is. And I think deep in their souls, and a part of it is because of the Southern strategy, part of it is because they are all the old Dixiecrats who didn't reform. Deep in the soul of the Republican Party lies a slave-holding man who every night slips down to the quarters and has his way with the Negro women.
I think you're right, because this dovetails with something that, and now this wasn't said on the air, this was one of those Rush Limbaugh moments, and Rush said, he gave an interview to something called badgolfer.com, Ben.
Huh.
And they asked him about, probably not. They asked him about a young girl, a young lady, golfer by the name of Michelle Wee.
Mm-hmm.
She is 16 years old, and she is at a place in her career right now that took Tiger Woods 4 more years to get to in the same place in his. She can drive a golf ball, little old bitty nothing of a girl. She can drive a golf ball 300 yards.
Well, you know, it's all it's all technique.
And yeah, and well, what Rush Limbaugh said about Michelle Wee was, my friends, she is nothing but a marketing phenomenon. Now, if that had been a little 16-year-old white girl, can you imagine the in-print orgasm he would have had?
Well, I kind of heard his NFL shows, so yeah, I do understand how.
Yeah, and exactly. It's the same thing. It goes back to him saying that Donovan McNabb was a creation of the media because they wanted to see a black sportscast or a black quarterback succeed, and that he was being given credit for things that he did not do. This is what we're dealing with. That's why I keep saying, and you know, maybe
Nigel
some
Page was too, you know, given all kinds of credit for things he did not do.
Yeah. But you see,
ooh, what I'd like to say.
I know. But the thing is, Ben, maybe some people get a little bit tired of my religious rantings or my pointing out of the occasional Nazi. But in our liberal sphere, there are people who think, oh, those people are crazy, and we'll just ignore them and they'll go away. Ben, you and I both know they will not go away. The more you ignore them, the meaner they get.
There's only one way to make them go away, and that's to make them take a dirt nap.
Hustle off and feed some worms.
You betcha.
Ben, thanks so much.
You take care.
Bye now. That's it. Agnes the Lovely produced the program tonight. The program was announced by Brian Reznor. Our engineer is Randy Kerbway. Ben Birch, whom you just heard, from Elgin, Illinois, archives this program at whiterosesociety.org. He also maintains the stream of the program. He's got a fundraiser going on. He's almost there. Help push him over the top. And give a little shove to our good friend Joe Vecchio at cupofjoe.blogspot.com. He is the next addition to the Head On Radio Network as soon as all the equipment is in place. And many thanks to our dear friend Peter, who makes all the little electrons go in all the right places with our computers. And the show, of course, is brought to you every night. Talk about thank yous. Brought to you every night by the thousands of members of the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They get up every day, they go to work, they build the American dream. And in sponsoring the formation of the Head On Radio Network, they're rebuilding the American dream. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you.